most of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Steve Futterman at the Stadio Olimpico in Torino, Italy, where the opening ceremony for the Winter Olympics has taken place. It was a spectacular opening, and it had a little bit of just about everything. Pomp and circumstance, the parade of nations, the athletes. There was Sophia Loren, part of a group of women carrying in the Olympic flag. Luciano Pavarotti sang Puccini. The cauldron at the stadium was lit by Italian gold medal skier Stefania Belmondo. With me now, Olympic historian David Wallachinsky. David, the issue of drugs and doping were not ignored here.
The president of the International Olympic Committee, Jacques Rogge, mentioned it in his opening speech, and for the first time, the subject of doping was included in the oath taken by the athletes.
The competition can now begin. The first medals will be awarded tomorrow. I'm Steve Futterman at the Stadio Olimpico in Torino, Italy. Now with more CBS News, here's Dave Barrett.
Michael Brown, the one-time head of FEMA, was back on Capitol Hill today before a Senate hearing looking into the slow federal response following Hurricane Katrina. He said those above him at the Department of Homeland Security share the responsibility.
Madam Chairman, I tell you that what occurred after FEMA was folded into the Department of Homeland Security, there was a cultural clash which didn't recognize the inherent science of preparing for disaster, responding to it, mitigating against future disasters, and recovering from disaster.
Brown said it was, quote, just baloney that Homeland Security officials didn't know about the levee breaches in New Orleans until the day after they occurred. Jill Carroll's captors say the new deadline is 16 days from now. The American journalist faces execution unless demands are met. Apparently, the kidnappers want more than just the release of women held in Iraq by the U.S. or by the Iraqis. And why would the latest video seen yesterday be sent to Kuwaiti TV instead of to Al Jazeera? Professor Bob Steele is with the Poynter Institute for Media Studies.
It may be that they are using Kuwaiti TV in the hopes that what they are trying to accomplish reaches a different sort of reception on the part of government officials, perhaps a different reception on the part of citizens in the United States.
The Border Patrol was chasing a van near San Diego. Three vans and a car just on the U.S. side of Mexico were involved in a crash about an hour ago. 29 people have been hurt. In 1968, he performed the first heart transplant in this country. Dr. Robert Shumway has died from lung cancer in Palo Alto, California at age 83.
He trained a generation of leaders in the world of cardiac surgery, and I think that that's probably one of the things he would like to be remembered for.
Dr. Robert Robbins at Stanford University. One other key part of Norman Shumway's work included research to stop patients' rejection of transplanted organs. The Dow climbed nearly 36 points today on Wall Street, finished at 10,919. The Nasdaq was up 6 and wound up the week at 2261. This is CBS News.
Why do energy drinks make you crash? I'm Dr. James Bragman, host of Prescription for Health. The answer is large amounts of sugar and caffeine. That's why I recommend 5-Hour Energy. It gives you hours of energy without the crash. 5-Hour Energy contains B vitamins, enzymes, and amino acids. Zero sugar and just enough caffeine. So if your energy drink makes you crash, then switch to 5-Hour Energy. Hours of energy now, no crash later.
5-Hour Energy is in the diet section at Walgreens, the pain relief section of CVS and Rite Aid, plus many 7-Eleven and GNC stores.
If you enjoy helping people and want to turn that passion into a career, you can. Right now, the Home Depot has full and part-time employment opportunities for sales, cashier, lot, department supervisor, and other positions. We're an equal opportunity employer with excellent benefits, tuition reimbursement, and thorough training. If this sounds like the perfect fit for you, apply at careers.homedepot.com or at your nearest Home Depot store. We'd love for you to be a part of our team, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
Cartoons, which cause trouble in many cities, can now be seen if you pick up a paper in the Pacific Northwest. Here's KIRO's Heather Bosch.
For some Muslims, creating any image of the Prophet Muhammad is blasphemy. So So while Seattle residents acknowledge there's a freedom of the press here,
with the controversy that's going on right now, I would say that's a little questionable.
We also have a responsibility to be sensitive to other cultures and religions.
But Dan Savage, executive editor of The Stranger, says,
I think it's a double standard.
He says it's unfair for mainstream papers not to run the cartoons out of fear of offending Muslims when many of those same papers run items critical of other religions. Heather Bosch for CBS News, Seattle.
Tonight's a time for decision. Will Steve Fawcett continue his flight to break the all-time distance record? Fawcett currently plans to cross Florida, where he started from on Wednesday, and land tomorrow in Kent, England. Light winds during the flight and a loss of fuel on takeoff play into the equation. I'm Dave Barrett, CBS News.
Ever wish upon a star?
Not lately.
Open your Valentine's present.
Wow, you named a star after me?
Let's wish on it. Wish for us.
It's the best Valentine's gift ever. For $54, International Star Registry will record your star name in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office and send you a beautiful gift package. Call the Star Registry at 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com. That's 800-282-3333 or starregistry.com.
Let's wish for forever.
I love you.
At CompUSA, we get how to make the best technology even better. Which is why this Saturday until 2 p.m., you can get the latest technology at just 7% over cost. Desktops and notebooks, including Apple's. Digital cameras, camcorders, printers, PDAs, and home electronics. All at amazingly low prices. But it's only until 2 p.m., so get yourself to CompUSA this Saturday and save big. CompUSA, we got it, we get it. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I would not lie.
All right!
Yes, complete with a snap, crackle, and pops. That's a vinyl recording of Eric Burdon and the Animals' historic song about the Monterey Pop Festival. And it feels like summertime here along the California coastline, doesn't it? Welcome to today's Peter B. Collins Show. We're live on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, and Freedom. We're live on KGOE 1480, serving Eureka, Arcata, and Humboldt County. And as always, you're welcome to join our conversation whenever the urge strikes you, because we still have an unfettered First Amendment right to express ourselves. Use it while it's still available to you. My number is 831-899-5792. That's a local call on the Central Coast. You can also reach me toll-free from Eureka or anywhere you happen to be listening, particularly for our online listeners who log on to KRXA540.com to catch the stream every day. The toll-free line is 888-579-2540. I'm going to say that again because sometimes it goes by too fast. 1-888-579-2540. Two regulars who are typically featured in the 5 o'clock hour on Fridays are going to be on earlier today to accommodate their schedules and to give those of you who listen to the early part of the show exposure to John Laird. He is the Assemblyman, Democrat from Santa Cruz, who chairs the Assembly Budget Committee. We're going to talk with him today about a recent retreat of the state Democratic legislators and their response to the governor's budget and his infrastructure bond program. We'll also talk about the controversy at the University of California over sweet severance pay packages for top people that were not approved by the regents, the people who are actually in charge of the UC system. At 3:45, Brad Friedman, who appears with us every week. He, of course, is the proprietor of bradblog.com. He's at the front lines fighting for our rights for free elections and freedom from rigged electronic voting machines. He'll be with us from 3:45 till 4:30 today. Then Joan Kenley joins us. That's Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist. She has a new program that starts on KRXA tomorrow afternoon called Talking Matters. It's a Valentine special, and so if love is on your mind or in your heart, you'll want to hear all about it coming up at 4:30. Our 5 o'clock hour today is going to be devoted to the situation in New Orleans, Louisiana. Is it the most neglected American city? And has the Bush administration turned its back on those who are attempting to recover and rebuild that city and its surrounding areas? There, of course, is new information today that the White House knew about the levee breaks well ahead of when they have admitted to knowing, like 48 hours. We'll talk about that with two people who know much more than I do. James Ricks is a government employee who has been in New Orleans quite a bit since September. And we're going to talk to Ann Lloyd, who owned a house and a business there, lost them both in the hurricane aftermath. And she has just recently returned to her hometown of New Orleans. So we're going to get some interesting perspectives from those two individuals. Joining me now to talk about the continuing controversy over the cartoon versions of the Prophet Muhammad that originally were published in Danish newspapers have led to provocations, demonstrations, riots, deaths in double digits now in various locations around the world. And it appears to be the kind of wildfire, political wildfire, that may be very, very difficult to tamp out. To talk about this, we've invited Lina El Ali. I'm sorry. She's program director of Search for Common Ground. She has an intimate knowledge of Islam and Muslim affairs. She grew up in the Middle East and in West Africa. And she has a finely tuned sense, it says right here, of Muslim-Western tensions, having spent the past 18 years living and working in the United Kingdom and the U.S. as a fund manager, investing in countries across the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. She has analyzed the political and socioeconomic conditions of a wide range of countries with Muslim majorities, and during the past 10 years, she has regularly participated in a variety of projects aimed at improving both Muslim and Western understanding of Islam. And that is a very tall order these days. Lina, welcome to our program. It's nice to talk with you.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, it must be difficult to address these issues because we've talked with a number of Arab Americans, Islamic Americans on this program over the last few days, and it prompts calls from people who are very angry about what they have seen breaking out. They consider it to be a provoked and hyped kind of reaction to a very minor incident of offense to Muslims. And in this country, there are a lot of people scratching their heads saying, what is this all about? After all, we live with cartoons that are offensive to somebody in this country on a daily basis. It's part of our media diet. So first of all, I thank you for joining us. And secondly, is it difficult from your perspective to talk about these issues because people have so many hardened, preconceived notions about what you ought to be thinking?
Yes, that's a very good point, and I thank you for making me feel that I'm not being totally strange, feeling that it is a difficult subject. There are a lot of misconceptions, but certainly there is a lot of anger and I think bewilderment at the same time. We have to address both sides of the issue. One, you mentioned it was a minor offense in the eyes of many. And the second point you mentioned is that the reaction has angered many people. The violent reaction that we've seen has angered many people. What needs to be understood, I think, is that for Muslims, for the vast majority of Muslims, it was not a minor offense. And the issue of was this an appropriate reaction? Was rioting that led to violence appropriate? And I think you will find that most people will say no. And in fact, many leaders of the local communities and many participants in many of the riots and the protests and demonstrations that we saw across the Muslim world were disappointed that things degenerated into violence. Many started out participating because they wanted to make a point, and the point was that they found these cartoons very offensive. So there's a lot to say, but to answer your question directly, yes, it is a difficult thing to address.
And Lina, I promise not to project you as an official spokesperson for all Muslims around the world, and likewise, I will not assume that I speak for all Americans. But I will say that I'm pretty much of a hardliner on freedom of expression. And while I do understand that these were seen as offensive by many people, the original or the origins of this alleged scandal seem relatively innocuous to me. It was somebody in Denmark who was trying to find somebody to illustrate a book for them about the Prophet Muhammad. and finding that there were strong strictures against any depictions of the prophet, this newspaper said, well, you know, let's see what people think, an accurate depiction of the prophet may be. Now, that certainly, tramples the sensitivities of some individuals, but this is a secular world. Denmark is a secular country, and I do defend the rights of the newspaper to operate in the manner it did. Now, we know that the Danish government was not very responsive. They appear to be very right-wing and anti-immigrant. There are many tensions of Islamic immigrants to Europe, as we saw in the riots that broke out in France in November and December. So I don't want to appear insensitive to the level of offense taken. At the same time, on balance, this seems to be a rather trivial issue.
Well, my understanding is that the editor in question commissioned these cartoons specifically to make a point that editors in general and writers and artists of all kinds in Denmark were self-censoring too much.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding from all that I've read and that I've heard is that it was a somewhat of a deliberate provocation. Nonetheless, regardless of whether this was the case or not, what happened with these cartoons is that two lines were crossed all at the same time. The first line that was crossed was a depiction of the prophet with a particular face, something that the Muslim world is utterly unused to.
Mm-hmm.
It goes against Islamic tradition, Islamic law, everything that Muslims have been brought up to believe as far as artistic expression goes. But once this happened, it also was not done in a flattering way to someone whom Muslims hold very, very dear.
I understand there was one depiction that showed the Prophet Muhammad with a bomb in his headdress, in his hair, and I understand that that is provocative. At the same time, in the grand scheme of things, this does not really alter the rights and limitations on rights that Muslim immigrants to Europe, or even, you know, landed citizens who happen to be of the Muslim faith, feel. And we also know that this was orchestrated during the Hajj. Danish imams went to Mecca, and they drummed up support for reaction to this. And I think in doing so, they tied in with political currents that have nothing to do with Denmark, nothing to do with free expression, very little to do with the images of the prophet, and a whole lot to do with political issues and payback to Europe and the United States. Now, I'll let you to respond to that. We have to take a break, and we'll return in a moment. My guest is Lena El Ali. She's Program Director of Search for Common Ground. We're talking, as you know, about the worldwide reaction to these cartoons that were published in Denmark. If you have a question or comment, you can join me right now. 831-899-5792 is our number on the Central Coast, or toll free from Eureka or anywhere else within the sound of my voice, 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
If you own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo certified and factory trained technician with over 16 years experience. Mike's partner Tracy is also a factory trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family operated full service Volvo repair shop, where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
Please join House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi and former White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta as they celebrate Congressman Sam Farr's 30 years of public service. Sunday, February 12th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey, local and national leaders will pay tribute to Sam's work on behalf of the Central Coast and the nation. That's Sunday, February 12th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey, starting at 6 p.m. For tickets or information, call 373-4607. That's 373-4607. Authorized and paid for by the Friends of Farr Committee.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, where it's 3:22 on this fabulous Friday afternoon. And I do apologize, this song might be offensive to some Christians. It's called The Road to Hell by British bluesman Chris Rea. We're talking about the controversy over the cartoons that depicted the Prophet Muhammad, originally published in Denmark. And this is a controversy that has spiraled upward and surprised many with its intensity and the way it has spread throughout the Muslim world, and has caused a number of deaths now, at least 11. And there was a big incident in Pakistan yesterday. Not clear to me if that was directly connected to this controversy or not. We're talking with Lena El Ali, the program director of Search for Common Ground. Lena, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to the comments I made just before the break, describing how, according to news accounts, the imams from Denmark went to Mecca during the Hajj, and they certainly drummed up a lot of support for their protest against the Danish government and the publications that originally published these cartoons, which are found to be very offensive. And do you agree with the assertions of Condoleezza Rice that at least in nations like Iran and Syria, that the governments have appeared to support, if not stoke the flames, of these protests?
Thank you, Peter. You mentioned two points earlier. One of them was the issue of possible foul play on behalf of some Muslim leaders who went to the Middle East and tried to drum up some support, so to speak. And another with regards to how passionately Western society feels about the freedom of speech issue. Addressing the first one, the question of mismanagement, shall we call it. Indeed, it does seem to be the case. But there is a story leading up to that, as far as I can make out from reading all the different things that I'm sure you would have been reading, which is that the Danish Muslim leaders tried to get a local political ear to listen to them first, but they got nowhere. They tried this for 3 months. They subsequently decided to go to the embassies in Denmark of Arab and Muslim countries. They presented their case, and the ambassadors who intervened to try and put forward the case of how offended Muslims were at this, again reached a dead end and couldn't get an audience with the prime minister or with anyone who wanted to deal with this issue. Mm-hmm. I think that was a mismanagement on the part of the Danes, but to be fair, I think in Denmark they were simply not used to this sort of thing. They hadn't had the sort of experience that other countries have had with Muslim sensibilities and Muslim culture, such as in the UK and in France, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So there was mismanagement on the part of the Danes themselves, and then mismanagement on the part of these Danish Muslims who decided to take their case to the Middle East. And it is most unfortunate. I think it is the sort quietly and much more effectively. And frankly, most of us hadn't even seen the cartoons or heard of them until all hell broke loose.
Indeed.
So that's on that issue, Peter. And on the freedom of speech issue, I think you're absolutely right. Freedom of speech is a fundamental pillar of modern, secular Western society. And this is something that Muslims must try to understand. In the same way that Western society must try to understand Muslim sensibilities with regards to things that are to do with religious tradition.
Clearly been dispatched from the Islamic world that this is something that is taboo. However, it is going to provoke some people who want to prove that they have the right to express themselves to make further steps that will be seen as offensive to the Islamic world. So how do we resolve this without, launching some kind of international war over some cartoons?
I believe there's only one way to resolve this, and this is to say that even though we don't understand one another, we Westerners don't understand this fuss that you Muslims are creating over cartoons. And we Muslims can't understand how, you can't see how upsetting this is for us. I think that we acknowledge that we don't understand one another's points of view, but we say nonetheless, we want to have a decent, cordial, respectful relationship with one another.
Understood. But, Lena, when people start dying over this kind of an issue, it does cause those of us in the West who believe in freedom of expression and who believe in freedom of religion to say, well, this is an intolerant response that, many of us simply can't accept. We cannot accept that, our expression is going to be limited by the sensitivities of people whom we're not really addressing.
There's a choice to be made, because one can continue saying, I cannot accept, and I cannot, I will not change, and I will not give in, and I will not, but then that's a choice one makes, and one is not placing peaceful, cordial, respectful relations at the center, and this goes for both sides. I think it's a tremendously difficult thing to do, but it is doable nonetheless, to say, we don't understand where you're coming from, but you know what, we're going to work on somehow getting along together anyway.
Lena El Ali, I'm sorry we're out of time. Thank you for joining us today. Program Director of Search for Common Ground on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. Attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market, so shop Monday through...
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to...
Arcata, Humboldt County. And every week we spend a few minutes with Assemblyman John Laird, the Democrat from Santa Cruz, who chairs the Assembly Budget Committee. It's usually later in the afternoon, but he's got a conflict in his schedule. We're happy to talk to you now. And there's some new listeners who aren't always tuned in later in the day who might have the opportunity to hear the wisdom of Assemblymember Laird. John, how are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Isn't this weather invigorating? It just makes me feel all human and everything.
Well, it's a shift. And earlier this week, we had all the Assembly Democrats on array for our annual retreat. And when it was 75 when we all left town on Wednesday afternoon, I told them and then said again at the press conference on the retreat yesterday that that's just so typical of the Central Coast. Everybody should come by And I think everybody's seeing it on as they're watching the Pebble Beach tournament on national TV as well.
Yeah. And did any of your members play hooky to run up the coast to check out the Mavericks surf contest?
They didn't, although I was talking about it because there was a big Santa Cruz contingent and I knew some of the surfers. But the waves were so high in different places, I was actually explaining how, you know, the once-a-year thing at Maverick, what it meant. And, you know, it's amazing how many legislators have districts that don't reach the coast.
Yeah. So. Yeah, very interesting. Well, I want to talk a little more about the retreat and about the Democrats' response to the governor's budget and the bonding proposals. But first, you were an item in the Chronicle's Materon Ross political gossip column the other day. And at a recent dinner with UC President Robert Dines, you diplomatically but very directly described some of the problems that you're facing on a political level because the UC system has repeatedly given very sweet severance deals
or lateral move packages for key individuals where in some cases they got paid six-figure salaries not to work. And at a time that fees are increasing on an annual basis and the squeeze is on the cost structure there at the UC system, this is not only a cost factor, but also a politically sensitive factor. Tell us a little bit more about what you told President Dines.
Well, it was a private dinner, and of course, nothing's really private, I guess, when you're in elected office. And so it wandered into Mateer and Ross a couple of weeks later. But basically, there were about five chancellors and a couple of regents and 15 legislators and a few other UC staffers, and it was a private dinner in Sacramento, and President Dines went through a few budget issues and the bonds and then got to salaries and basically said, well, we're going to be transparent, we're working on it. But when it went around to the legislators, I took it upon myself to be the one to give the talk that the Chronicle described as tough love. And that basically, as you said, the same agenda where student fees are hiked is just a couple of agenda items away. There's huge management increases in salaries. And we have UC employees. I spoke to some last year on campus that were food service workers and gardeners, and they hadn't had a pay increase in a significant period of time. And in fact, the food service workers had actually lost their meals. And that if he's really talking about competitive salaries, it has to be the people that work at the university, teach at the university, and upper management, and that they pretty much mishandled this press-wise. And if they really wanted us to help them, they had to demonstrate to us that they were willing to help themselves. And to many of us in the room, the university is an institution that, you know, has changed our lives and the lives of our family and is really an economic engine for California. And I think as people start to take pot shots at it because this is a problem that's unaddressed and that their actions aren't clearly explained, it's just a disaster for all of us. And that's basically what I told him.
And John Laird, do you think that, and this is not a shot at any individual member of the Board of Regents, but do you think collectively that it is too top-heavy with wealthy individuals and corporate bigwigs who are comfortable with a six-figure severance package or shipping somebody off to another campus or another corporate division to earn a big salary for a couple of years and then just go away without a lawsuit? And also, does it affect their focus on smaller issues? Do they, you know, are they the corporate types who just look at the bottom line, look at the summary budgets, and don't want to get involved with the details of, say, MRC Greenwood's transfer and then her subsequent demotion with some, you know, special circumstances in terms of her pay package?
I think there is a little of what you said, and part of it is that the people that serve on corporate boards are generally other people in the corporate world, and that the diversity that characterized the regents at different times in the past isn't totally there right now. But at the same time, it's one of those situations that many of them have other jobs, and it's a real public service for them to serve, and every hour they spend is an hour of volunteer time away from their job, and it's somewhat limited, and they tend to trust the administration to drive the meetings and drive the general discussions of policy. And if the administration is at some point where they're insensitive to that issue or they haven't been paying attention, then just by extension, the regents will be there unless they take a real oversight that's over and above where they've been. And this blew up in, I believe it was 1992, almost the same issue, and they had certain policies that haven't paid attention to with some of these revelations that are coming out. And I think it's going to lead to a shakeup at some point, and it's, you know, we'll get shaken up. But unless they can get a handle on this in real short order and be able to explain it to the public, that's the inevitable outcome, I think.
And ultimately, is it President Robert Dines, who is the top dog here and the one who whose desk at which the buck stops?
I think it is, because he's recommended a lot of this. He supervised the administration when they've been outside of some of these policies, and I think it's incumbent upon him to get a hold of this. And if he doesn't, I think it's at his peril. And the thing that happened the night of the dinner that was very striking is that I sat down, and the president had been responding to people, legislators that spoke. He basically said he didn't have anything to say. He had to take in my comments. And then Dick Ackerman, who's the Republican Senate leader from Orange County, stood up after me and basically said he agreed with my comments. And I turned to President Dines and said, in essence, that should make you really nervous when it goes across the spectrum like that. And I think it is, this is something that is not a partisan issue. And right now, he's got to fix this soon, or there are going to be problems.
Assemblyman John Laird with us on the Peter B. Collins Show. Turning now to the retreat that you mentioned that took place earlier this week, the Democratic legislators, what is the response that has been fashioned to the proposed budget of the governor and to the long-term, the 10-year plan for infrastructure improvements funded entirely by bonds?
In the bonds, and try to do this briefly, because I know we don't have much time. The governor's proposal would go over five election cycles and $68 billion and entirely on a general fund. It has over a $6 billion deficit now and would have a $9 billion deficit in the out year if we proved it's a budget unchanged. And so we really decided to ratchet down the amount to try to see if there aren't some mechanisms that relieve its dependence on the general fund, to try to do it in 2006 and only into 2008 if we can't fit it. And I think we had priorities that were a little more along the lines of what you might expect from Democrats, which is we want to add housing and affordable housing and resources and some things for seismic safety, along with education and transportation and water and levees. And
But John, let me jump in.
Take the first step, but it's got to be fiscally sound.
Let me ask you, just in your view, where you draw the line between prudent spending out of the general fund on infrastructure, because there's no interest involved and you don't have a 30-year payback on bonded indebtedness, and what functions, you know, what big ticket projects are appropriate for bonds? Because it seems to me that this is just another way that Schwarzenegger is trying to skirt his promise not to raise taxes.
Well, I think you're right. And it's really appropriate for long-term things that in general can be paid off by the users over that time. I mean, if you were doing transportation to try to really beef up the movement of goods in the ports and some of the transportation bottlenecks, hopefully you'd index the gas tax to inflation and the increases would pay off the bonds. Or if you built a water project, you would have the people that receive the water through their rates pay off the cost of it over time, and we would be leveraging the construction of these projects. And mm-hmm. That's what is more appropriate. That's what we want to move more toward. And I think, interestingly, the Republicans might be more problems for the governor on this than the Democrats, even though we want to scale it back it with revenue and move it to hospitals and resources and a few other things that are affordable housing that are more appropriate if you're planning for 10 million more people in California over 20 years, which is, in essence, what the governor said this is about.
And to this year's budget, it is an election year. The governor's up, and so we expect the usual political struggle over the budget and posturing for political gain. How much do you think there will be contention, and do you think we'll have a budget by October?
I think that it's in everybody's interest to get the budget out this year, and the governor started so much closer to us than he'd been last year. And there's still some differences on children's health care, assistance for seniors on Social Security, where he doesn't want to give them a cost of living increase, and people on CalWORKs, and restoring academic preparation at the University of California. But we're much closer together. So I think that the governor has mortgaged the future. He's taken extra money from 3 years, and he wants to spend all next year and put off the day of reckoning to the year after. And so it depends if there's some Republican pushback in the legislature or the governor want to go the last way with us to try to resolve some of the things that we think are still problems in.
All right. It's going to be a very interesting year. John Lehrer, just a final kicker question. Susan Kennedy, can she be both the chief of staff and a separately paid consultant to the governor's election campaign?
I don't think she should be. I think there's even Gray Davis had a firewall. Be involved in campaign decisions that affect public policy decisions. And she said recently, well, I want to be like the boys. Well, if the boys are getting paid campaign stuff, they shouldn't either. I just think there needs to be a firewall, and no government staff member needs to be getting campaign funds for doing campaign work as well.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. We'll talk to you next Friday.
I'll look forward to it. Thanks, Peter.
Democrat John Laird, Assemblyman from Santa Cruz, Chair of the Assembly Budget Committee, our weekly visit. We're going to take a short break and return with his Bradness, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We'll talk about a number of issues, including, inevitably, electronic voting. That's ahead right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Joan Kenley, bringing you Talking Matters. You may already know me as the author of Voice Power and Whose Body Is It Anyway? Or maybe you've seen me on Oprah, CNN, Dateline, and Good Morning America, or heard my voice on The Simpsons. But now I can invite you to join me on my own show, Talking Matters, starting right here, Saturday, February 11, 3 to 5 p.m. We'll talk about matters that touch your mind, body, heart, and soul. We'll explore your dreams, secrets, hopes, and sorrows. How are you really dealing with today's world? Do you ever feel overwhelmed? Tune in for inspiring stories, useful ideas, and surprising ahas. Talking Matters, live streaming on the web, and archived 24/7 at talkingmattersradio.org. So let's keep talking, Saturdays at 3 on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is KRXA 540 News anchor Casey Lynch, inviting you to join us for a new program, Coach Casey's Call, Saturday mornings from 11 to noon. The show is dedicated to promoting local athletes and the teams they compete for. Coach Casey's Call features in-studio guests as well as listener phone calls, giving you an opportunity to join in the discussion and support the local sports scene. Join us Saturday mornings, 11 to noon, here on KRXA 540 AM for Coach Casey's Call.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on this fabulous Friday afternoon. Feels like summertime, doesn't it?
Take it all out on your stride. It is taking for all.
There they are, Gorillaz. Peter B's picked a click from 2005 and gratified to see them lead off the Grammy Award show the other night. But nobody was watching. They'd all prefer to watch the rank amateurs on America. Not bad. Just an aside, what do you think about the idea that twice as many Americans wanted to watch American Idol than the professional performers on the Grammys? And they had a great lineup, you know, a lot of incredible talent.
Maybe they're mad because they won't let them download their songs for free anymore on Napster. I don't know what to make of it.
It's just so bizarre because, you know, when Kelly Clarkson wins a Grammy, I feel like, wow, we have just recycled. Yesterday, Jason Leopold was on our show.
Oh, good.
You people are breaking new ground, and on a daily basis, you show up the mainstream media for their failures. Just an example, Brad, yesterday, New York Times, page one, upper right, the lead story was about force-feeding of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
That story was broken by The Observer in England over a month ago. I've got it right in front of me here from Sunday, January 8th.
Yep.
And you routinely scoop the so-called MSM, the corporate media in this country, when it comes to issues of dissent, when it comes to issues of minority voices speaking up, and most importantly, when it comes to the issues of electronic voting. So much of the work you do deserves to be front and center and reported to every American, but the media doesn't think it's as sexy as whatever they think is sexy.
Yeah, I don't know what they think is sexy anymore. Apparently it's not sexy. You're right. Until 3 or 4 months after folks like me have already reported it. I can't explain it. I mean, we're living in a strange world right now, Peter. I'm meeting tonight with Senator Deborah Bowen, and to talk about a few things. And it's going to be a dinner with her, myself, and a couple of other bloggers. I think she's, you know, realized, like so many folks, that if you want to, you know, get the word out and, you know, not have it languish and disappear altogether, then, you know what, talk to the folks who are actually on the beat every day getting the word out, and eventually it'll make its way into the mainstream. I you know, along those lines, and boy, we can talk about just about anything you want here, but just broke about an hour or two ago a letter that was sent by John Conyers to the White House, to Bush and Cheney, exclusive on Brad Blog, asking, you know, what authorization they had to, or under what legal grounds they had to authorize Libby, et cetera, to leak that classified information that I know you were talking to Jason Leopold about yesterday.
Exactly.
And as well, Ann Coulter has just shot off her mouth again, although this may make it on the mainstream. She's called Muslims ragheads at the Conservative Political Action Conference in D.C., where I have a correspondent there, and we hope to get the complete audio from that. She talked about assassinating Bill Clinton and other breaking news.
Wow, she just doesn't stop. Now, let's stop for a moment here, because I wanted to mention the Conyers letter.
Yeah.
As you know, I scour the web, and I read several newspapers, and I submit to a lot of bad cable programming in the evening. But you brought this to my attention first, and I haven't seen anything about this Conyers letter. It is significant. And I've got the CNN website up on my other screen here, and that's not one of their lead stories right now. And it should be.
Of course it should. I mean, he is the ranking minority member of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. He is the longest-serving member of in the House, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, it's notable, and, of course, they, you know, do nothing about it. I mean, he had a few months ago, you may recall, he delivered a note by hand to the White House signed by more than 500,000 Americans demanding answers to the Downing Street memo, the so-called Downing Street memo. Never got a reply from the White House, and I'm not even sure if it was covered in the mainstream media at all. I know I had the photographs up, and they held, you know, those basement hearings, et cetera, but I it's gotten to the point where I simply cannot explain it anymore, and I almost don't even think about it. At this point, I feel like I need to get it out there. I need to get it on the record. And the hell with the mainstream corporate media. If they catch up at all, whether it's 3 or 4 months later, we'll have had the information out there on the record for people to make sense of. But
and Brad, just along the same lines, we talked to John Byrne from RawStory.com the other day. He had just published a letter from not a dangerous lefty minority member like John Conyers, but James Sensenbrenner, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, who fired off a letter with 51 questions for Alberto Gonzalez. Now, this is another one of the Republicans who has at least embraced principle temporarily to bring out, you know, full information about this domestic spying scandal. That, too, I saw no coverage in the mainstream media.
It's mind-boggling. I don't know who the assignment editors are. I don't know what they are thinking. I can only assume either they don't give a damn, which I have a hard time believing, or they're just scared stiff, or they don't much care for us bloggers, and when we break something, they would, it is to their shame that it is not them breaking it rather than us. So perhaps they like to avoid such stories rather than give us the credit that we deserve for this kind of stuff. Although I should point out, Raw Story is not a blogger. It's a legitimate online internet news site, but, you know, perhaps the fact that they keep getting beat by folks like John Byrne at Raw Story, et cetera, they would rather avoid pointing that out. But
yeah, they gave us Heather Wilson, the Republican congresswoman from New Mexico, who called for a full investigation, and she chairs a subcommittee on intelligence. She's a former member of the National Security Council during Bush 1, so they did give her some ink and some airtime, but we're seeing very selective coverage of what to me is the most significant national security and constitutional crisis since Watergate. And some of the media seem to get it, but it seems to come and go. Brad, it's time for a break. When we return, I want to get a Diebold update from Alaska and Ohio, and also talk about the story that you reported about one of the great whistleblowers of our time, Sybil Edmonds, and her tussle with the Republican leader in the House, Speaker Dennis Hastert. That's all ahead in the next hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show as we return with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Listen live, Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, chefs, farmers, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by the Monterey County Growers and Vintners Association's 4th Annual Passport Weekend, February 17th, 18th, and 19th, travel the world without packing a suitcase.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Your tax dollars at work in Iraq.
$8.8 billion.
That's right.
And that's money that is not accounted for.
Not accounted for.
The former FEMA chief says he told the White House about New Orleans levies.
For them to now claim that we didn't have awareness of it, I think is just baloney.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. In the rush to rebuild Iraq, the U.S. government has spent billions. In an exclusive prepared for 60 Minutes Sunday night, CBS News correspondent Steve Croft reports the Coalition Provisional Authority can't account for $8.8 billion. He interviewed one official who said contractors were paid in cash.
Fresh, new, crisp, unspent, just printed $100 bills. It was the Wild West.
Croft reports the government has gone to court in one case trying to recover $50 million from Custer Battles, a company that was supposed to provide security for commercial aviation at Baghdad Airport.
In a memo obtained by 60 Minutes, the airport's director of security wrote to the coalition authority, Custer Battles has shown themselves to be unresponsive, uncooperative, incompetent, deceitful, manipulative, and war profiteers. Other than that, they're swell fellows.
So much cash disappeared, in part because there was little or no accounting system to keep track of it. Now this.
for the fans. This is for all of you out there who want to get a little closer to the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. We know you're a fan, and AT&T has put together a way for you to get to know Team USA. You can send personal best wishes and good luck messages to each of your favorite U.S. Olympic team members. Just visit att.com/Team USA and let AT&T deliver your support to the U.S. Olympic athletes in Torino. AT&T, proud sponsor of the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. Introducing the new AT&T. Your world delivered.
If you enjoy helping people and want to turn that passion into a career, you can. Right now, the Home Depot has full and part-time employment opportunities for sales, cashier, lot, department supervisor, and other positions. We're an equal opportunity employer with excellent benefits, tuition reimbursement, and thorough training. If this sounds like the perfect fit for you, apply at careers.homedepot.com or at your nearest Home Depot store. We'd love for you to be a part of our team, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
Today, former FEMA Director Michael Brown told his side of the story to a Senate panel investigating a response to Hurricane Katrina.
Bluntly naming names and recounting phone calls, Brown told senators that despite claims to the contrary, the White House and Department of Homeland Security knew full well that the levees broke and New Orleans was flooding the day Katrina hit.
For them to now claim that we didn't have awareness of it, I think is just baloney.
Brown said top Homeland Security officials cared only about terrorism and treated FEMA like a stepchild. He said he had a good relationship with President Bush to a point.
Unfortunately, he called me Brownie at the wrong time. Thanks a lot, sir.
That's when the president famously told him he was doing a heck of a job, something the senators on this committee have concluded no one in the government was doing in dealing with Katrina. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House. It wasn't until the day after Katrina struck that the administration said it had confirmation that the New Orleans levees were breached. The night before, says spokesman Scott McClellan, there were only conflicting reports. But he says the government knew there was flooding and the number one priority was rescuing people. He says the cause of the flooding was secondary.
Immediately after Brown entered his Senate testimony, he was subpoenaed by the House committee looking into the Katrina response. Iraqi kidnappers have issued a new ultimatum. They now threaten to kill American journalist Jill Carroll in 16 days unless their demands are met. Carroll was abducted in early January. In a new video broadcast yesterday, she pleaded for fast action to save her life. Bob Steele, who teaches ethics at the Poynter Institute, says the kidnappers are using the media.
In this particular case, journalists have to be very careful in how we use these images and the information to make sure we don't exacerbate an already dangerous situation.
The Kuwaiti TV station that received the video says it also received the kidnappers' demands and passed them on to the authorities. The Winter Games are officially open after a spectacular kickoff. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman is there.
The Torino Olympics began with an opening ceremony featuring some of Italy's cultural icons, both past and present. There were tributes to Italy's art and history. More recent reminders of Italian culture included appearances by Sofia Loren and Luciano Pavarotti. The athletes of the nations marched into a rousing ovation, and in his speech, Olympic President Jacques Roga urged the athletes to compete fairly and attack the use of performance-enhancing drugs. Steve Futterman, CBS News at the Winter Olympics in Torino.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Martin, what's with the long blonde wig and the sword?
I am not Martin. I am Manuelo, the Spanish knight, and you are my chambermaid.
Have you been drinking?
I shiver with longing to bathe in your warmth. That's why I come bearing this gift.
A diamond right-hand ring for Valentine's Day?
Yes, my smoldering little maid. It was made for you.
Oh, Manuelo.
Anyone can be a romantic hero this Valentine's Day. Give her a diamond right-hand ring that shows you know who she really is. Go to adiamondisforever.com/valentine and find the perfect style for her.
If you enjoy helping people and want to turn that passion into a career, you can. Right now, the Home Depot has full and part-time employment opportunities for sales, cashier, lot, department supervisor, and other positions. We're an equal opportunity employer with excellent benefits, tuition reimbursement, and thorough training. If this sounds like the perfect fit for you, apply at careers.homedepot.com or at your nearest Home Depot store. We'd love for you to be a part of our team, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
Vanessa.
Excuse me.
Don't you just feel sorry for Brownie, huh? I loved hearing that testimony from Michael Brown. The president called him Brownie at the wrong time. Thanks a lot. And he's pushing back. He says the White House knew the levees had broken, even though Bush maintained for another 18 to 24 hours that he didn't know about it.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time.
Next hour, we're going to take a closer look at the situation in New Orleans. We have two guests who have been there, one who is still there. And I'm looking forward to getting an update on the failed recovery to date.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time.
Yeah, Mike Brown was in the wrong place at the wrong time. With apologies to Dr. John. We continue now with Brad Friedman, the proprietor of bradblog.com. You can join our conversation. We'll go to the phones here shortly at 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast. That's 831-899-KRXA. Or toll free from Eureka, anywhere else, 1-888-579-2540. 888-579-2540. And Brad, before we get to our Diebold update, any comment on Brownie's testimony today?
Yeah, well, actually, I was going to say, were you just calling the President of the United States a liar, sir?
Yes.
Well, you know, that ought to be enough to get you excoriated by all the right-wing bloggers and media folks in the world. But if you're Ann Coulter, apparently that will get you invited on their shows and lauded, et cetera.
And to your point, if I suggested that it was a good idea for the president to die or be killed, I would be strung up. My NSA minder, who monitors this program every day, would report me immediately. But Ann Coulter...
Yeah.
Can do it on a regular basis, as you detailed for us just last week.
Indeed, and she was just asked about at the Conservative Political Action Committee. She was just asked what her biggest moral or ethical dilemma was, and she said, and I quote, "There was one time I had a shot at Clinton. I thought, Ann, that's not going to help your career."
Wow. What kind of shot? Now, was this with a rifle or this was a sexual shot?
Hard to say, but I know that she claims that she's packing. So if she claims she had a shot at Clinton, there you go. Make of that what you will.
Well,
I'll give you one other quote here. She just said, "I think our motto should be post 9/11, raghead talks tough, raghead faces consequences." It'll be interesting to see how that is dealt with in the media, particularly given how beside themselves all these wingnuts were about Coretta Scott King's funeral and the fact that Jimmy Carter pointed out that the Kings were wiretapped without a warrant many years ago and how outraged they all were about that. Failing to point out, I might add, all of the same folks who used Ronald Reagan's funeral to make their political points, including John McCain, who eulogized Barry Goldwater and made a number of political statements there at his funeral. So we have very much at two separate standards in this country, Peter, as you know. And it's really getting pathetic, and I'm afraid it's really going to get ugly at some point in the future.
Wow. All right, let's talk about Diebold. We have two updates. One first up from the great state of Alaska.
Yes, well, apparently Diebold has relented in Alaska, where they previously, in their contract with the Alaskan Board of Elections, it was against the contract to release the data, trying to get this straight here, the data files that contained all of the voter information from the 2004 election, despite a bunch of published numbers that didn't make sense, where there was, in some places, more than 200% voter turnout. So some folks up in Alaska wanted to get at that file. They were told that according to the contract with Diebold, they were not allowed to release it because it was proprietary information, trade secret from Diebold. Well, that didn't sit real well, and earlier this week we got information, a letter that was sent from the Board of Elections up there in Alaska saying that they would release the information, that Diebold has agreed to give that information out. However, there was a caveat that was not noticed by a lot of folks who were, you know, felt that Diebold was backing down. They actually, and this is a quote from the letter, wish to reserve the right to manipulate the data before releasing the file.
Oh, that's a lovely choice of words.
Yes. There you go.
Now, make of that what you will. Take us to the state of my birth, the land of the Buckeye, Ohio, where in Montgomery County, which is where Dayton is located, there was a rerun of an election that was tainted by Diebold machines.
Yes, in fact, these are the Diebold touchscreen, the brand spanking new Diebold touchscreen machines, the Diebold AccuVote TSX, which has been added in now 41 of 44 counties in the Buckeye State just for this election in November of 05. And in fact, the touchscreen machines apparently recorded more votes than registered voters. And so due to that, as you say, a complete revote had to be held over one particular bond issue, which was, I guess, close enough that they figured it merited it. Mm-hmm. But this is something that, you know, Diebold has gone on and on about how these machines are so reliable and accurate and everything else. And here you go. We had to hold a complete revote because of them. We've got a mess to look forward to on our hands as we move towards the 06 elections. More Ohio counties are bringing on these touchscreen machines. And, well, as you know, as you and I have spoken about, these machines are garbage, unreliable. And I think we're just going to see a lot more of these messes. The question is, will we catch them? Will we notice? And if we do, will folks try to say, well, there wasn't enough votes to make a difference, so we're going to leave it stand?
Your vote counts, data subject to manipulation.
Yep.
You also reported yesterday that the Supreme Court in New Jersey has issued a ruling regarding electronic voting machines.
This was a case that was originally tossed out. Some folks were challenging the constitutionality of these touchscreen machines, the lack of paper trail on them. Apparently, it is charged that they are in violation of the New Jersey state constitution and New Jersey state election law. And the case alleges that, in fact, all electronic voting machines are against the New Jersey Constitution. It was originally tossed out, but now it has been reinstated by an appellate court there, and we'll try to keep an eye on that case. We've got just those few details and a press release from the group that's challenging this law. That press release is linked in full at our site. And we'll see what happens as this moves forward, because it could well have far-reaching implications for other states around the country who have similar state constitutions.
Correction, I said Supreme Court, and Brad correctly pointed out it's an appellate court in New Jersey. And finally, Brad, State Senator Deborah Bowen, who you're dining with tonight, was on our program the other day. She had some hearings in Sacramento about open source code for these voting machines. And she reported that Diebold is considering getting out of the electronic voting machine business.
Well, isn't that interesting? I have a feeling I know where she got that little tidbit. But, yes, in fact, an interview, a very short interview, sort of a throwaway puff piece that came out from AP a few days ago, had an interesting a couple of comments from the new CEO of Diebold, Tom Swiderski, who took Walden O'Dell's place, the fellow who was famously their CEO and had promised in a Republican fundraiser to deliver the state of Ohio to George W. Bush. He gave some pretty clear indications right now that they are taking a look at the elections division at Diebold and considering dumping it altogether, whether that means selling it, whether that means shutting it down. At this point, we don't know. He promised in the January 31 earnings call to do a $100 million restructuring of the company, which, you know, their stock has been beat up pretty badly over the last year for a number of reasons.
And the core business is banking machines, automatic 20 machines, right?
Yep, and they're having trouble there, too, although they're doing in general all right. I think what's really affected them here is they're getting beat up over this election stuff. This is a 150-year-old company, Peter. that had a terrific reputation, was much beloved by stockholders for years because it paid dividends very reliably. And this otherwise good brand name has really been run into the ground. And that's one of the reasons why Wally O'Dell was unloaded there from the company. And now, with Swiderski suggesting that they may be selling or shutting down the election division, it puts things even more up in the air. I know if I was a county or state board of elections that was about to enter into a multi-year million-dollar contract, I'd like it to not be with a company who may be folding at any moment.
We're going to take a break and continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We'll go to the phones in the next segment. If you have a question or comment, join us now at 831-899-5792 Central Coast or toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show, About College Funding, this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding, Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
They used to call it the Crosby Clam Bake. It's the perfect season for white shoes, white belts, and my plaid pants. Let's check traffic and see if the golfers are getting in the way. Here's Amy Knight.
Yes, it's the second day of the Pro-Am Golf Tournament, and shuttles are available at Cal State Monterey Bay Campus through Sunday. Also, shuttles are available in Carmel, Pacific Grove, and Monterey, but you can expect delays along Highway 1, Holman Highway, and 17 Mile Drive. It's very busy out there for a Friday. Also, two problems on Santa Cruz, Granite Creek Road at Branson 40, an injury accident with a solo vehicle that struck a ditch, but the roadway is blocked and southbound 1 before Morrissey. The two-car accident involving a car carrier and a van are off to the shoulder. Toyota owners, right now, your participating genuine Toyota Service Center is giving away gas cards worth up to $20 with qualifying service or tire purchases. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA.
It's 4:21. I'm Peter B. Collins. This is the Peter B. Collins Show, and we're talking with Brad Friedman, his weekly visit from bradblog.com. And lines are open if you'd like to check in with Brad, 831-899-5792, Central Coast, 888-579-2540. And Dave joins us from Humboldt. Hello, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Peter. Brad, one of your most committed and dedicated admirers here. The dilemma that's confronting this country, though, as I see it, however unpopular these cons may be, however exposed may be their conduct, they remain confident that they can make these machines do whatever they need to have them do. Now, since a lot of counties and states and precincts don't use these machines, that is to say, if every machine that they do have has to fabricate 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 votes, whatever, they can make them do that. I hear, well, the people would never allow that to happen, but I have to ask of them, what could we do then that we can't do now? Because a lot of us, including the three of us, are ready to do whatever can be done, I think.
Yeah. Brad?
Yeah, and good. Always good to hear from you, Dave. Thanks for calling in. You know, I think we just have to simply keep doing what we're doing. I think we're frankly doing everything right. We're up against a Goliath in both the media and the political parties, largely the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party is themselves guilty of not giving us the attention they should. We are going to continue pressing forward. We're having making gains, I think, all over the country, getting the word out. And as you see each week in the stories that we cover in states and locales around the country, the word is getting out. And it may be just one of those things that we have to wait for the mainstream media to catch up with us. Indications are that they will. I think I've hinted at this a couple of times, perhaps on your show. But word is still that a major media organization is going to be jumping into this game very soon. And I'm hoping that will make a big difference, because there really is a pack mentality to these guys. And, you know, as soon as New York Times or NBC, 60 Minutes, something like that, comes out with a report, everyone else seems to feel like, oh, okay, well, we've got permission now to jump on it and start reporting it, and then they do. So let's see what happens. We just need to keep making noise and see if the mainstream media catches up with us, and then I think we'll begin to see real progress in this movement.
I have the fear that a lot more angry people are going to be calling radio shows, writing letters to the editors, and joining protests, but they just ignore all that. They just like, we can do what we want. We control the machines.
Yeah, but, you know, as mentioned with that issue in Ohio, the folks in Montgomery County, Carlisle, are pretty clear now on what happened and that they have concerns about those voting machines. The folks out in North Carolina, after they lost 4,500 votes, I believe it was, altogether in Carteret County, North Carolina, that state went ahead and...
I'll take Dave's point just for a moment, and
sure.
That is that despite what you just pointed out, that there are some good things happening,
yeah.
We just saw the legislature in Ohio pass a draconian measure, HB3, that kills any prospect of future challenges to the machines, future challenges to a federal election, a presidential vote count in Ohio, and basically just locks the door on citizen oversight or review of the election process in Ohio. So one step forward, three steps back.
No, you're absolutely right, and Frank, I'm doing.
Dave, thanks for the call. Brad, I just before we run out of time, we got 2 minutes here, I want to turn to the story that you broke about Sybel Edmonds. She, of course, is the principled former FBI translator who's become a whistleblower. Her case went all the way to the Supreme Court and got trounced. She still speaks up very bravely. And she's the one who first told me about Dennis Hastert and this $500,000 in very small contributions, $199 or less, which don't have to be itemized in the public records. He got almost $500,000 in campaign contributions in that manner, and it is suspected that some of them came from Turkish interest groups.
Yes, and how many minutes we have left here before I...
Minute 20.
A minute 20, all right. That story was originally broken in September of last year by Vanity Fair, and where I picked it up recently this week was Hastert's attorney suddenly, out of the blue, in the February issue of Vanity Fair, writes a letter denying some of what the original story reported, very selectively cherry-picking certain items from it. The question is why, 5 months later, has he suddenly decided to get something on the record about it when he wouldn't earlier? And why, in fact, are they refusing still to disclose all of the information of the unitemized contributions made between 1996 and 2002, which there is reason, at least, to believe had something to do with Hastert pulling this legislation at the last minute that was supported by Turkish interests who had supported him pulling it. So I've got a full reply by Sibel Edmonds at Bradblog. There's going to be more on that next week because there are finally going to be some whistleblowing hearings in the Senate. And I believe Sibel is going to be there, not giving testimony, but she will be there. And I'm talking to her about covering them for us at bradblog.com.
Great. Brad Friedman, thanks for joining us. I just imagine that Tom DeLay sent Dennis Hastert a bag of Turkish coffee to thank him for putting him back on
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
KRXA has a Valentine for you. Joan Kenley is bringing you her new Saturday show on KRXA 540. It's called Talking Matters, and you don't want to miss it. You may already know Joan as the author of Voice Power and Whose Body Is It Anyway? Or you've seen her on Oprah, CNN, Dateline, Good Morning America, or heard her on The Simpsons. Now Joan's brought her program to KRXA 540. Talking Matters starts Saturday, February 11th, 3 to 5 p.m. Her show will touch your mind, heart, body, and soul. Tune in to her Valentine special February 11th at 3, full of laughter, tears, and great ideas. You'll hear couples with heart-pounding stories. Joan will talk about the biochemistry of love hormones and the hot topic of emotional infidelity. Learn more at TalkingMattersRadio.org. And keep talking with Joan, Saturdays at 3 on KRXA 540.
Please join House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi and former White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta as they celebrate Congressman Sam Farr's 30 years of public service. Sunday, February 12th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey, local and national leaders will pay tribute to Sam's work on behalf of the Central Coast and the nation. That's Sunday, February 12th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey, starting at 6 p.m. For tickets or information, call 373-4607. That's 373-4607. Authorized and paid for by the Friends of Farr Committee.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, chefs, farmers, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by the Monterey County Growers and Vintners Association's 4th Annual Passport Weekend, February 17th, 18th, and 19th, travel the world without packing a suitcase.
This is the Peter B. Collins, ladies and gentlemen, the Peter B. Collins Show, and Evis is in the building.
Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't.
Oh, thank you, King.
Shall I stay? Would it be a sin if I can't help falling in love with you?
Valentine's Day is coming up next Tuesday, February 14th, and if this is the first you've heard about it, you're in deep doo-doo, lover. Dr. Joan Kenley joins us this half hour. Her new show, Talking Matters, debuts tomorrow afternoon with a Valentine's special, 3 to 5 p.m. on KRXA 540. And if you're listening in Eureka, you can log on to our website, KRXA540.com, to hear the program. Joan Kenley, welcome to our show today.
Oh, I'm laughing here, Peter. I mean, to put Elvis on is just to melt everybody's heart right away.
I love that song. That and Crying in the Chapel
are
two of my favorite Elvis songs of all time.
Of all time. And tomorrow's show has so much good romantic music, too, Elvis and everybody else. I mean, part of the fun of the show is all the wonderful music you're going to hear for Valentine's Day special.
Yes, and Joan, we're going to describe the show for folks here in a moment. I just want to reintroduce you. You were with us last Friday, but Joan Kenley is the author of Whose Body Is It Anyway? And a book about voices called Voice Power, How to Get the Most Out of Your Voice. She is a PhD. She has a PhD in psychology, and she's launching this new show, and it's a lot different from Montel or, gosh, anything that's out there in the media. Joan, I got to listen to the tapes of tomorrow's broadcast, and I am very pleased and also, of course, quite impressed. I think that people are going to find this to be a very different approach to conversations about intimacy and relationships. You've got two very interesting couples, a younger couple, Megan and Craig, who are 2 years into a relationship and engaged to be married, and Richard and Sarita, I guess they've been married 13 and together about 15 years.
You've got that all right, and they are so fascinating. I mean, they're just a giggle, and they're also full of surprising things that they're going to tell us tomorrow. I'm just so pumped about it.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about your approach to a guided conversation, because as I listened, I thought, well, gosh, you know, people need to understand that this is not just eavesdropping on a therapy session.
No.
It's not the kind of grandstanding and weird egos that you see on daytime TV. it's real honest conversation about crucial issues that we face in our relationships.
And one thing that was interesting for both of the couples, I have to say, Peter, is that when I was asking them the questions, they said they hadn't had these conversations between themselves because my asking certain things brought memories and stories and experiences back to them that made them feel even closer because they were on the show. And, of course, that's what we want to do. We want to model for the audience how just a few simple questions can take you down a wonderful path of feeling closer, more open, more safely vulnerable, or actually more joyful about what you two share together.
Well, and Joan Kenley, I'm not going to put myself on the couch here, at least I hope not.
No.
But I have to say that in listening, there were some interesting reminders, not in any way to make me feel bad or guilty, but ideas and some positive suggestions on ways that I could probably do a little work on my relationship with Kathy.
We can all do better on our relationships. And even putting the show together, I thought, gosh, I can follow some of my own suggestions, too.
It is interesting. Now, talk a little bit. Let's give people a quick snapshot of these two couples. Megan and Craig are in the first hour tomorrow between 3 and 4 o'clock.
Right. And they're so charming because they're both very mature people in their early 30s. More mature than many of the people in the practice that I had for many years in the way that they decided to approach going after getting into a serious relationship consciously. And we know that the falling in love hormones that come up, oxytocin and testosterone, they make us blind almost to any fault in the person that's in our romantic stage of relationship. And they tried to go into this with their eyes wide open because they knew what they didn't want from past relationships. And it's very interesting to watch their journey and how they managed to handle differences that came along and how they are so conscious not to blame each other for what comes up and when they are upset, what do? And they have such deep respect for each other and mutual goals and mutual interests. And that's what makes it so exciting to see what's going on with them.
And I loved hearing Craig tell the story of going to Megan's family's family reunion.
Which lasts 10 days, by the way.
Yeah.
One of the most unusual family reunions on the block.
That's running the gauntlet, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Submitting to inspection.
Yes. And it's a good gaggle of people up by a lake. I mean, it's just a wonderful picture of what good family can do for relationships and for family.
And then in the second hour, we'll meet Richard and Sarita.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed because Richard is a therapist, a counselor in his own right.
Yes, he is.
And yet I didn't hear him using any professional defenses or even any buzzwords or lingo.
Nope.
He was very much separate from his career and talking about his experiences in meeting Sarita and talking very openly.
He was just really terrific, as she was. And again, because they met in midlife, they're at a different level of maturity going into relationship. But what's so much fun is that a mutual friend fixed them up, and the very same day he met Sarita, Richard went back to one of his buddies and said, "I just met the woman I'm going to marry." And, you know, that sort of sparks you up to hear a story like that from a guy who's a therapist and willing to go on the air and say these kinds of things.
Well, and as you mentioned, Richard and Sarita both, they met in midlife at the wedding of a mutual friend. And it certainly resonated with me when they each described that that night they couldn't sleep.
That's right. And that's what love does to you. You know, talk about romantic songs. Love makes you dizzy. Love makes you sleepless. It makes you blind. It makes you giddy. It makes you more full of energy. And it's such a great thing. But what Sarita and Richard bring up is that they cycle back through that falling in love part during these years that they're together. So these scientists that have come out with this recent research that, I don't know, made me kind of mad, said these love hormones that come up only last a year, and then they said they last 2 years. Bullshit. You know, it can romance can cycle through a marriage even if it's 50 years young, and we just have to be awake about the possibilities and that it tastes different at different times in our life.
And is it possible to get hormone replacement therapy for oxytocin?
No. No, don't go there. Maybe 20 years from now, but not today.
But science hasn't made that available. We have to rely on chocolate.
Right, that's right. This is Valentine's Day. Let's be clear. Champagne, chocolate, flowers, kissing of the hand.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break here and return with Dr. Joan Kenley. Her new show, as we mentioned, is called Talking Matters. It debuts tomorrow afternoon, Saturday, 3 to 5 p.m. on KRXA 540 on the Central Coast. And again, if you're listening in Eureka, you can log on to our website to hear the program, KRXA540.com. And then after the broadcast, the archive program will be available at Joan's website. That's JoanKenley.com. And Kenley is spelled K-E-N-L-E-Y. And if you can't spell Joan, give us a call. We'll help you out with that, okay? I want to open up the phone lines here and ask you to welcome Joan to the airwaves and also offer any ideas, suggestions, or comments, issues that you would like to hear aired out in this new conversation radio program called Talking Matters about your heart, your soul, your body, your mind, and all the things that we put together to make our intimate lives rich and rewarding. So if you have a comment you'd like to add, we'd love to hear from you. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast. That's 831-899-5792. Eureka, call us toll-free. It's 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. And I got the Love Unlimited Orchestra, but we could not fit Barry White into this tiny studio. I apologize. We'll continue in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Listen live, Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove has the finest selection of fresh local fruits, veggies, and meats. The Grove Market is also your first stop for delicious artisanal breads and other baked goods, and boasts an outstanding selection of Monterey wines. For competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey, shop at the Grove Market, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 7, 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove. 242 Forest, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic. That could be a golf cart in front of you. Let's get the latest from Amy Knight.
Yes, it could. Or it could be a lot of slow traffic trying to get to Highway 1 on Holman Highway. So expect delays as you approach the traffic light there. Highway 1 slow as well. Also 17-mile drive. It's going to be heavy on Lighthouse Avenue through Pacific Grove. Also, a couple of problems still clearing out. Granite Creek Road at Bramble 40 Drive in Santa Cruz, an injury accident with a solo car. In Felton, Covered Bridge Road at Graham Hill Road, a vehicle fire with fire crews on scene. And Graham Hill Road at Roaring Camp Road, a broken down truck in the roadway. TomTom Go is your portable everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Amy. We'll check back with you about 5:15 or a little later.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks.
Uh-huh.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Dr. Joan Kenley. Getting ready for Valentine's Day.
You really got me going. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, you really got me now. You got me so I can't sleep at night.
Dr. Joan Kenley, my guest. Talking Matters debuts tomorrow afternoon, 3 to 5 p.m. on KRXA 540. And I want to dedicate that song to Richard and Sarita, the couple you'll hear in the second hour of the program. You got me going. I can't even sleep at night.
That's so great.
Ray Davies captured that one for us back in 1964.
We love that.
Yeah. And, Joan, I just have one other that I can't resist playing here. Let's see if this works.
Don't play that song. That achy, breaky song, the most annoying song I know.
I remember when
that song, that achy, breaky song, I might blow up my radio.
That is the Weird Al version.
How could I have forgotten?
Of Achy, Breaky Heart.
Right, right.
And I like it much better than the original.
Oh, for sure.
But music does capture the very themes that you and these couples are talking about on the program, and you wove in a lot of music, and I think people will enjoy that tomorrow. And how much do you think people still use music as a key to romance, as a way of setting the mood?
I think because we know people still have their special song, that music is still as important as ever, and also, when couples break up, don't you notice there's more breakup music in the world than almost anything else? Because people want to have, you know, soar into that heartfelt feeling of, I'm lost, I'm alone, but oh my God. And we sometimes get attached to those feelings, I'm afraid. But music is so important to the feeling of setting romance, for acknowledging that we love each other. All of that. I mean, you know, just to hear Elvis at the beginning, you know, of this conversation that we're having, it was just, oh, isn't that great?
Yeah. And I heard that, and this is where I run out of mind space for celebrities, but Lance Armstrong has a satellite radio show, and he just broke up with his musician girlfriend.
Yes.
And played her song.
Well,
anyway.
There you go. There you go. Achy, breaky heart all over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what insights did you pull out of these two conversations from two rather different couples?
Well, I think that we're in a different era with couples now. I think that, you know, in my therapy practice years ago, people wanted to hang on to problems and were afraid to move or change. And I think because there are a lot more books out, a lot more conversations on the airwaves, and a lot more willingness to talk about intimate matters in both books and newspapers and media, that we have a language that we didn't used to have, and we have inspiring stories we didn't used to have, and people can relate to that. And as long as we all keep in conversation with each other, which is what the show is about, and not go off in a corner by ourselves and try to think our way out of relationship troubles or around what's hurting us or around why things aren't perfect. And we know that 50% of married couples do get divorced. And on the other hand, there are more singles around than ever who are being actively engaged in internet dating. Women now can support themselves with their careers. Some women don't want children. We've changed the whole landscape of relationship. And I think there should be hope about that and encouragement about people being actively intentional if they want a relationship to go out and find one. And if they're happy being single, that's not a stigma anymore.
And, Joan, I think one of the interesting things, as I was listening to tomorrow's broadcast, it kind of reminded me that this is much more powerful and evocative to hear these individuals talking about their stories, their experiences, and honestly about some of the challenges they face. And to me, you know, it's much more instructive than any self-help book that I've ever picked up. I don't know about you, but I have a kind of resistance. I feel the same way about computer manuals.
Yes, I do too.
But
I think books are much harder than live stories. I believe in stories. And again, for Richard and Sarita to say that at different cycles of their relationship, they went to various marriage counselors to actually work on some things. Well, excuse me, but that is what people should do when they need help. Get help.
Yeah. And the other thing is, Joan, because you're not selling a self-help book or a series of tapes or videotapes or something like that, you don't really, you know, pose as the grand authority who could tell me or anybody else who's listening what the blueprint is for success. You're much more focused on getting people to look inside and find those resources in themselves.
That's exactly right. And I think the key to all of what you just said is how to find the right questions and find some short lists of things. We're going to post the 10 to-dos for a long-lasting relationship on my website. And just looking at 10 things that make a great relationship is pretty simple. It's not reading a book. It's just looking at the cold, hard facts of what you may or may not be doing in a relationship that could easily change if you're committed to change. And by not taking a single point of view, because I like to look at life through every lens we can possibly have, then we have a landscape of riches that we say, oh, today I think I'll focus on my heart and see what's going on. Or maybe I need to focus on taking a long walk in the woods and see what that does for me in getting my head clear about what's happening around my Valentine. So there are many, many ways to look into your soul, to look into your mind, but you have to be committed to doing something. I mean, let's go back to the Nike thing. You got to just do it.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Dr. Joan Kenley. Her new show, Talking Matters, debuts tomorrow afternoon, 3 to 5 p.m. on Saturday on KRXA 540. And as we mentioned, it'll be streamed live at KRXA540.com and then available right after the broadcast, archived at JoanKenley.com, spelled K-E-N-L-E-Y, JoanKenley.com. Now, Joan, one of the interesting things that I also picked up in these discussions and also from some of your comments reflects on something we touched on a couple of minutes ago, and that is how things have changed. And one of the changes that I picked up is the power dynamic between males and females. It's interesting that Megan was Craig's boss.
Yeah.
And that Richard and Sarita met in midlife when they were both, you know, pretty far along their career paths. And in each case, trying to work out the power-sharing arrangement can be a challenge, but it's also important not to be hamstrung by old modes.
Oh, you bet. And in fact, if we go to Chop Wood, Carry Water, which I'll be talking about on the show, it's a wonderful book. And they have, as the second stage of relationship after romance, this power struggle period where you do sort of sort out who does what, how, and where. And, you know, the old paradigm was the man told the woman what to do and she did it. And it was wonderful to hear Craig say, and only in his voice does it sound so great, but I'll quote him. He said, "I love women of power. I was looking for a woman of power." I mean, that's so refreshing.
Well, and the flip side of that was when Megan told the story about how he was having some buddies over, and she was steamed because she had to clean up the apartment.
Right.
And so steamed, she left. She didn't want to be there when the happy crew arrived.
No, smoke was coming out of her ears. Well, it's true. And then the next day, he actually looked inside himself and went up to her and heartfully and meaningfully used another powerful tool in a relationship. He apologized to her.
Mm-hmm.
And without apology, I think we're all lost. I mean, there's whole books on apology, which, again, we don't have to read everything, but we need to bring it up that they exist. If you don't know how to apologize, there's tons of ways to learn and practice so that you're good at it.
And, Craig, if you're listening, just a bit of free advice from Peter B. The next step is to go ahead and hire a housekeeper.
What good advice you have, Peter. I always knew that.
Well, it's certainly one way out of that dilemma. Sure. Joan Kenley, give us a sense of the future plans for Talking Matters. Some of the subject matter that you're going to be discussing. I know the second show, people will get more familiar with the same two couples, Megan and Craig and Richard and Sarita.
It's sort of Valentine's show, too, because we had so much when we had them here in the studio that we just couldn't stop. And we're going to get into some of the ways that people look at rough spots in relationship and pitfalls in relationships and how they work through those. And that's so fascinating. That's really interesting. And then we're going to go into the next show with the magic of conversation and what really makes a conversation zing and why can't we have that at the dinner table and in the car with our husband or wife or family or friend. The art of conversation is a little lost these days, and you can learn how to do that and actually be closer to people and find more about what you really believe deep in your own heart if you really are intentional about having a good, deep, wonderful conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're setting a great example, and I want to invite people to tune in tomorrow. It's going to be a great debut of Talking Matters with Joan Kenley, 3 to 5 p.m. Saturday afternoons on KRXA 540, starting tomorrow and going forward. And again, if you're listening outside the area, the website will be streaming, krxa540.com, and the show will be available after the broadcast at joankenley.com, K-E-N-L-E-Y, and that's where you can also pick up more information on Talking Matters and some of the commentary and tips that will be presented in the show. Well, Joan, thanks for joining us today, and hey, break a leg or something.
Or break your lips or something like that. It's been a pleasure, as always, to talk to you, Peter, and thank you so much for all your great support.
We'll be listening tomorrow afternoon. That's Dr. Joan Kenley. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter B. Collins. Stay tuned. In the next hour, we're going to get up close and personal about the situation in New Orleans. Things are not progressing very well months after Hurricane Katrina hit. And we'll get two different perspectives in the next hour. James Ricks will join us. He has made several trips to New Orleans over the last few months. And we're also going to meet Ann Lloyd, who lost her home and her business to the hurricane. She has recently returned to New Orleans. And we'll get her first-person account of the scene there. That's coming up next hour. Your calls are welcome at 1-888-579-2540 or on the Central Coast at 831-899-5792. Right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Dave Barrett. Since the U.S. invaded Iraq, some $8.8 billion in reconstruction money was allocated, but how was it spent? Correspondent Steve Croft says it's a mystery.
The U.S. government has made no attempt to try and recover any money lost, missing, unaccounted for due to fraud.
The Coalition Provisional Authority had plenty of cash to dole out.
They came in shrink-wrapped bricks, they called them, of $1,100 bills, $100,000 to a brick. And some of the people that we've talked to at the CPA said that they called them footballs because they used to toss them around the office to kind of break up the boredom.
Millions went to one company, Custer Battles.
They were awarded a $15 million contract to provide security for commercial aviation at the Baghdad International Airport, which a few weeks after the contract was let, it was decided that for security reasons there would be no commercial flights in and out of Baghdad International Airport.
More on this story can be heard in the upcoming edition of CBS's 60 Minutes. Sitting before senators, former FEMA director Michael Brown discussed the government's response, or lack of it, following Hurricane Katrina. Here's correspondent Bob Fuss.
Some testimony is conflicting, but one thing that's abundantly clear is that people at FEMA didn't get along with their bosses in the Department of Homeland Security. Michael Brown says he routinely went over their heads to the White House because he felt they didn't care about hurricanes, just terrorism.
The policies and the decisions that were implemented by DHS put FEMA on a path to failure.
A top Homeland Security official complained Brown let his animosity to officials interfere with his job and contended that when things were at a critical point in New Orleans, he didn't tell them what they needed to know. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Sentenced today in Camden, New Jersey to 7 years in prison, Vanessa Jackson, the adoptive mother of four boys, she had earlier pleaded guilty to a single count of child endangerment. One of the boys, Bruce Jackson, confronted her in court today saying, "You not only deprived us of food, but also the chance to grow up as normal kids." Bruce Jackson has put on nearly 100 pounds since he was found searching a trash can for food in October of 2003. Back then, he weighed little more than 40 pounds as a 19-year-old. Wall Street, the Dow climbed nearly 36 today. The Nasdaq gained 6 points. The 20th Olympic Winter Games are officially underway in Torino. IOC President Jacques Rogge told the crowd of about 35,000 at the opening ceremonies,
"Our world today is in need of peace, tolerance, and brotherhood. The values of the Olympic Games can deliver these to us."
The Olympic cauldron was lit by Stefania Belmondo. Twice she had won cross-country skiing gold. American Rob Cohn came from Denver to catch the games.
"It's great. The city's beautiful. It's very walkable, and they've done a great job."
First medals will be awarded tomorrow. American Chad Hendrick could win gold in the men's 5,000-meter speed skating event. Some experts think that he could win five in Torino. This is CBS News.
Tiger Balm presents Jerry Rice.
Starting at wide receiver.
I'm ready for some football.
All-time record holder and Tiger Balm's biggest fan.
Huh?
Especially Tiger Balm's new pain-relieving patch.
The patch works for me.
Just apply the advanced hydrogel patch and Tiger Balm goes deep. Deep into aching muscles and joints. Tiger Balm's been around almost as long as...
Hey, watch it, pal.
Number 80, Jerry Rice.
Take a tip from me. Go for the Balm, Tiger Balm, and put the Tiger in your team.
Available at drugstores everywhere.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. In this surly to bed and surly to rise world, it's nice to find a group of people who love what they do. The accountants at Grant Thornton are just such people. It's their passion for what they do, their expertise and partner involvement that have made them one of the largest accounting organizations in the world, with member firms in over 100 countries. Visit grantthornton.com. It just might brighten your day, too. Grant Thornton, a passion for the business of accounting. This is Charles Osgood, and I'll see you on the radio on the Osgood File.
They may not be old enough to drive, but they are linked to trouble in Maryland. WTOP's Kate Ryan has the story.
When police caught a 15-year-old who robbed two banks in Prince George's County, Maryland, he told them two men approached him, indicated they had a gun, and ordered him to carry out the robberies. That was January 20th. This week, another county bank was hit, and another teen told a similar story. And on Wednesday, when another bank was robbed in neighboring Bethesda, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C., a 14-year-old described similar circumstances. The teens have not been charged. They're considered victims. Police and the FBI haven't publicly said all the cases are connected, but an FBI spokesperson says there are absolute parallels in the incidents. Kate Ryan for CBS News, Rockville, Maryland.
29 people were hurt near San Diego this afternoon as three vans and a car were involved in an accident. At least one van was being chased by U.S. Border Patrol agents. That accident happened just on the American side of the border with Mexico. I'm Dave Barrett, CBS News.
For the fans. This is for all of you out there who want to get a little closer to the 2006 U.S. Olympic team. We know you're a fan. And AT&T has put together a way for you to get to know Team USA. You can send personal best wishes and good luck messages to each of your favorite U.S. Olympic team members. Just visit att.com/teamusa and let AT&T pick team. Introducing the new AT&T. Your world delivered.
If you enjoy helping people and want to turn that passion into a career, you can. Right now, the Home Depot has full and part-time employment opportunities for sales, cashier, lot, department supervisor, and other positions. We're an equal opportunity employer with excellent benefits, tuition reimbursement, and thorough training. If this sounds like the perfect fit for you, apply at careers.homedepot.com or at your nearest Home Depot store. We'd love for you to be a part of our team.
Dylan's funeral song called Bury My Body.
Bury my body, Lord, I don't care where. Bury my body.
And it comes out of the late 60s, one of the Cooper sessions. Al Cooper with then a young phenom named Shuggy Otis. And I have held back playing this song in the interest of good taste, because as you know, because so much of New Orleans is below sea level, when the flooding occurred after Hurricane Katrina, many bodies that had been buried floated up. Many crypts were opened by the storm, and of course the scene, if you've read or saw it on television at the time, you know, was chaotic and quite dismal. And today even more information came out about when the White House was notified of the first levee break in New Orleans, far ahead of the timeline previously given to us. And Brownie, Michael Brown, testified before the Homeland Security Committee in the Senate today, and he dumped on the Homeland Security Department, headed by Michael Chertoff, and he took a couple of shots at the President of the United States, in particular saying that when Bush called him Brownie, he said he didn't really appreciate the timing of that. Heck of a job, right? So, irrespective of the personal plight of Michael Brown, he has admitted that he failed, that FEMA failed, and that Homeland Security was ill-prepared before and as soon as they knew the extent of the problems. In addition, the New York Times reports today some things that we already knew, but confirms. Federal officials knew long before the storm showed up on radar that 100,000 people in New Orleans had no way to escape. Only 10% of the evacuation plan was able to be executed. Michael Chertoff, who I mentioned, head of Homeland Security, failed to name a principal federal official to oversee the response, and that led to chaos and a lack of a clear chain of command. Mayor Ray Nagin at first directed his staff to prepare a mandatory evacuation on Saturday, 2 days before the storm hit, but he testified that he had not done so that day while he and other officials struggled to decide whether they should exempt hospitals, hotels from the order. The New Orleans Police Department fell apart. There's a powerful story in a recent issue of the New Yorker magazine that details the way that many police officers failed to observe their obligations and just cut and ran. And over 150 officers have left that force, many in disgrace. The situation related to the recovery continues to be very dicey and difficult. Fewer than half of the mobile homes, the temporary housing that have been purchased and intended for the New Orleans area, have been delivered. And meantime, many people are trying to return to their homes. Later this hour, we'll talk with Ann Lloyd, who is a New Orleans resident. She lost her home and her business in Hurricane Katrina, and she has just recently returned to try to piece her life back together. James Ricks is a colleague and a friend, and he joins us on the program this afternoon. He is employed by the federal government and has spent time in New Orleans in recent months. James, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be here.
Just without me loading up any big questions, tell me your observations from what you've seen on the ground in New Orleans, and in particular, your assessment of the progress toward making that a livable city again.
Yeah, you know, that's a question that I get quite a bit, and most of my colleagues get the same question. And, you know, here we are nearly, 6 months after the two hurricanes really just obliterated those communities in the Gulf region. And the reports that we're getting from people who are in the field are that in certain areas, particularly in the Ninth Ward, for example, things look as bad as they were when we were there, and I was there in September and October framework. The residents are coming back to their homes, and this is the first time they've seen them in quite a long time. They're devastated. This is the first opportunity they've had to be there. They're not quite sure exactly where do they go from here, what kind of support's available, how do you get in contact with the right particular source to get the right information so then you can get the sort of aid that one needs. It should come as no surprise to you or any of your listeners that one tragic situation upon another, unfortunately there are residents who are coming back and in a few episodes they're finding their relatives.
Yeah.
In some cases, up in the attics, because that's where people fled during the time of the flooding. It's still, to me, and I was there for quite some time, a very unbelievable situation in terms of just the magnitude of the devastation, but also from the standpoint of where we are now with respect to the recovery,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite uneven.
Now, James, I've read about the mountains of debris that have been hauled out of New Orleans. And by the way, in talking about this, I'm not oblivious to the damage to Mississippi and other areas of the Gulf Coast.
Indeed.
But our focus this hour is on New Orleans. But I'm curious, in the areas that were flooded and that were underwater for quite some time, are they safe? Because the sludge that was flowing around there included all kinds of toxic elements and sadly dead bodies and all kinds of debris from, you know, animals and, food that had spoiled. And so it was quite a soup. And in your opinion, are those areas, now that they've been drained and the levees have been at least partially rebuilt, are they safe for humans to inhabit?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. And one of the things about that whole situation is that when we were first deployed there, we were given our standard personnel protection because of all the aspects that you talked about. A lot of sampling has been done of the water, the soil, and the air. And it is right now it's being analyzed. Some has been analyzed and been posted on websites, and people are having a hard time making sense of that. And it depends on the interpretations of what that data may mean for individuals. When we were there, the way we interpreted the data, because part of my responsibility when I was there was to meet the first residents who were coming back. And one of the things that I tried to do was to process and find out who had existing health conditions, particularly respiratory disorders. And what we tried to do was be sure they had appropriate clothing, because many people came back not knowing what to expect. So we made sure they had masks and gloves and the right kind of booties and how long they could stay into a confined area. And all of that was based on what their health situation was. Some of us who came back from New Orleans had something that was known as Katrina cough, this persistent sort of cough and sort of pasty taste in your mouth that you just couldn't seem to get rid of.
Mm.
Whether or not we can say it's safe or not safe, again, there's a big debate about interpreting the data.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I'm hearing, mixed stories about it, sort of like what happened after 9/11.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a while before we get a real clear, definitive, okay, here's where things are. And that's unfortunate because right now people are in those situations and they're not clear exactly in terms of, well, are they at risk? And if so, how much risk?
I'm glad you brought up 9/11. I was going to mention it because the former EPA director, Christine Todd Whitman, was criticized last week and responded in her own defense because she made some rather remarkable statements shortly after 9/11 that the zone around the World Trade Center was safe. And we now know that those statements were probably not true.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody give a similar kind of blanket all clear for New Orleans, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, no. No one said that at all. What they said was we're taking samples, again, of water, soil, and air, and that that information would be posted on various websites and that people could then access those websites. What was missing in many cases was that there was no way for people to interpret exactly what that meant. So you go to a particular website and you see data for soil, and no one knew exactly what does that mean.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not hear anyone, at least from the time that I was there, nor since I've been back, as making blanket statements that, yes, you can go back, everything is fine. I've not heard anyone make those kinds of statements.
We're talking with James Ricks here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll continue in just a moment. If you have a question or comment about the scene in New Orleans and the progress, so to speak, of recovery efforts, give us a call right now. 831-899-5792 is our number on the Central Coast. That's 899-KRXA. You can call me toll-free from Eureka or anywhere else you happen to be listening. It's 1-888-579-2540. 888-579-2540. 5:16 now. We'll be back in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichorn, owner of Eichorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
I'm Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Show. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m., we'll explore Monterey Bay regional wine and food, markets, restaurants, menus, and prices. I'll interview winemakers, chefs, and other key players. We'll put food and wine together, and then we'll take them apart. If it's handcrafted beer or goat's milk and it's good, let's talk about it. Join me every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. to discuss food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay region, and especially delicious slice of our tasty planet. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Are you looking for money for college? Every year, billions of dollars in financial aid go unclaimed because parents just don't know how to properly access those funds. Mistakes are made in filling out applications, deadlines are overlooked, and ultimately it's the student who loses out on desperately needed funds. R.J. Moyer, president of AboutCollegeFunding.com, offers solutions to your financial aid dilemma.
If you're the parent of a college-bound high school junior or senior, critical deadlines are rapidly approaching, and we do specialize in late-stage college funding planning. Regardless of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic. It's 520 now, one of the busiest weekends of the year on the Monterey Peninsula. We get details from Amy Knight.
Yes, and as you know, the Pro-Am Golf Tournament is this weekend. It's the second day, and it's very heavy around Pebble Beach, Carmel, and Pacific Grove, Holman Highway, Highway 1 and 17-mile drive. Spectators leave the course. And as you head up Highway 1 into Moss Landing, Highway 1 at Dolan Road, reports of an injury accident now cleared from the roadway. It's off to the shoulder. Also in Salinas, North 101 near Baranda, getting reports of a new accident involving two trucks in the center divide. We had lettuce that was scattered across the lane just about 10, 15 minutes ago. That's been cleared, but the trucks may be a result of that problem.
I'll bring some dressing.
Okay, great. And Covered Bridge Road at Grand Hill Road, an earlier car fire now cleared. This report brought to you by your genuine Toyota Service Center. They're giving away gas cards worth $20 on qualifying service or tire purchases.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, live up and down the left coast. We're live on KRXA 540 Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Live on KGOE 1480 Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County. Our thanks to UB40 for a little amusement. We're talking about the recovery efforts in New Orleans following the hurricanes of last August. And James Ricks is with us. He is a government employee who was dispatched to New Orleans after the tragic incidents there and is sharing some of his perceptions with us here this afternoon. James, one of the things I want to talk about that's a little sensitive was brought into some perspective by Congressman Barney Frank in the last couple of days. He used some language that some people thought was over the top, and he described the prospect of the return of New Orleans to its original ethnic composition as unlikely, and declared that the policies of the recovery efforts are, in effect, going to permit ethnic cleansing. And that strong language, some people find that a little bit harsh. But in reality, it's fair to say that the African Americans, who were the majority population group and who were concentrated in the areas hardest hit by the flooding after the hurricanes, are still out of the area, many unable to return. Many in the Bay Area have been kicked out of their FEMA-paid hotel rooms just this week. And I'm wondering, as an African-American, what your sense is of the policies, and do you agree or disagree with Barney Frank's comment?
Well, you know, when I was there, one of the things that came up in some discussions that we had with some local officials and a couple of national news reporters, and I'm not sure anybody understood the significance of it at the time, but it was very clear that we were beginning to see some major social demographic shifts in New Orleans in particular. For all the reasons that you've outlined. There are individuals, primarily African Americans, not exclusively so, but primarily so, who have been displaced as a result of this. They're unable to get back. And you also get the interesting interplay here of race and class, because not only will some of the African Americans may not be able to come back, but some have found jobs elsewhere. Those who have not been able to find jobs and don't have the skills that the marketplace can use at the moment, they still may not be able to get back, and even for those who have been able to begin now to sort of trickle back in, it's unclear whether or not they're going to be able to reside in the areas in which they lived prior to Katrina. Mm-hmm. So yes, there's been some major demographic shifts. In fact, there was one hotel that we went to have dinner, and we were talking with one of the hotel managers, and he said that they were all learning how to speak Spanish. And he wasn't kidding. He said because a lot of their workers had been displaced, and there's no way right now they continue to function without having that population there, that working staff. And so now they're getting, again, the interesting politics, if you will, of internal migration policies. A lot of Latinos are coming in from Texas and elsewhere, and there's the issue of, well, we don't know how to speak Spanish, and we've got to begin to deal with that.
And, James, these are directly linked to policies. For example, Bush initially suspended the law that would require the competitive wage to be paid.
The Davis-Bacon.
Thank you.
Yes.
In that area. And, of course, this was a disincentive for anyone who had been displaced to return home to work for substandard wages when
right.
you don't have a home and all those other complications. In addition, we have the picture now that is coming into focus that those who lost their homes are going to get 60 cents on the dollar,
correct,
which might
yeah.
be, in some cases, just enough to pay off the mortgage, leaving them nothing to rebuild with.
Correct.
And so these policies do appear to favor people who were displaced who already had some personal savings or some sort of an asset base. And as you said, the interplay of race and class is very powerful there, because many of those who had no savings and had no financial cushion are the African Americans who were displaced from the poorest neighborhoods of New Orleans,
which also were the areas that were most heavily devastated. As well. And recently there have been some discussions among some of the academicians about what this may mean in terms of upcoming elections, in terms of just the base for particular districts, and what impact, for example, will it have on Texas, not just Louisiana, where there was a lot of the residents went to Texas because that was closer than some of the other areas, and they had relatives there.
And when you parse it politically, it's a lot of Democrats who were displaced, and they may not be participating in the next few rounds of elections in Louisiana.
Right.
James, I want to turn to the health care system there. I saw a disturbing piece on public television's NewsHour the other night where a relief agency that ordinarily goes to earthquake zones or other parts of the third world to help people recover with, you know, medical tents and doctors who fly in. This kind of effort was being done in New Orleans. They had a health fair at an outdoor location where thousands of people who've been unable to get medical care, unable to get new spectacles, have lined up for this kind of generous benefit that's being delivered. But it underscores that the existing institutions are unable to service even the small population that has returned.
That's true. That's true. Peter, one of the sort of hidden stories, if you will, that is now beginning to get some of the attention and was a major concern for us because we did some of that work ourselves, is the status, if you will, of the condition of the medical infrastructure in New Orleans in particular. And not only from the piece that you talked about, but there was a piece in the New York Times not too long ago and a couple of interesting pieces on NPR, if you will, that talked about just what you brought up. And right now, I think there may be three hospitals that are operating within New Orleans. However, none of those hospitals are at full capacity in terms of just getting back the medical personnel. The doctors and the nurses who are there are in a constant state of doing triage in emergency rooms. I mean, that's the main source that people are now coming in for care. The average wait from some of the data that I've seen is 6 hours. If you're coming in on an ambulance and you're not immediately in a trauma state, the average wait for EMS personnel with someone that needs to have care is 400 minutes.
Wow. Now, James, I got to stop. The break is coming and I can't control it. But
yeah,
James Ricks,
yeah.
I want to thank you for joining us and sharing your views about
the recovery.
Thank you,
Peter. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All
coming
right.
up next, we'll talk to a New Orleans resident, Ann Lloyd, who's back in her neighborhood. That's coming up next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Please join House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi and former White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta as they celebrate Congressman Sam Farr's 30 years of public service. Sunday, February 12th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey, local and national leaders will pay tribute to Sam's work on behalf of the Central Coast and the nation. That's Sunday, February 12th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey, starting at 6 p.m. For tickets or information, call 373-4607. That's 373-4607. Authorized and paid for by the Friends of Farr Committee.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances, giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
Hi, this is Karen from Monterey Floral. Valentine's Day is not far away. Call Monterey Floral to order your sweetheart's bouquet. Chocolates, balloons, and foot baskets are also available. You provide the massage. Let Monterey Floral help you make this Valentine's Day extra special. We are located at 1250 Del Monte Avenue. Give us a call today, mention this ad, and receive a surprise gift. That's 641-0651. 641-0651. Remember, flowers say it all.
Hi, this is KRXA 540 News anchor Casey Lynch, inviting you to join us for a new program, Coach Casey's Call, Saturday mornings from 11 to noon. The show is dedicated to promoting local athletes and the teams they compete for. Coach Casey's Call features in-studio guests as well as listener phone calls, giving you an opportunity to join in the discussion and support the local sports scene. Join us Saturday mornings, 11 to noon, here on KRXA 540 AM for Coach Casey's Call.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and our focus this hour is New Orleans. How's the recovery coming, and what is life like in that amazing city? And a little music right now from Dr. John, also known as Mac Rabenak.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. I'd have said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line. I've been on the right trail, but I must use the wrong car. Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for.
Joining us from New Orleans this half hour is Ann Lloyd, and I know just a little about you, Ann, because I got your number from Elisa Llewellyn, who is displaced from New Orleans and is here working in the California area on a radio program that I'm involved with. So it's a pleasure to meet you, and thanks for taking the time to talk with us this evening.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
And what Elisa told me is that you lost your home, and also you had a business that you lost due to the hurricane and the flooding aftermath. Give us a quick sketch of what your life was like before Katrina.
Okay. My husband and I had a house in the mid-city area, which is one that hasn't been talked a lot about, I don't think, in the national news. I guess because it's not quite as bad as some of the other areas in town. But we got about 4 feet of flooding in our house. But we had a house in mid-city, and I had a restaurant in uptown New Orleans called the Mango House, which was a Caribbean restaurant. And I had been operating that for about 3 years prior to the storm.
And was the restaurant damaged, or was it simply there was no business to keep the business going?
Well, it wasn't damaged. Well, it had minor damage, just, you know, some broken windows and the sign blew out, that sort of thing. But I had some other types of losses, I guess. Elisa is a perfect example. All of my staff moved elsewhere, or of course evacuated elsewhere, and they're now all living elsewhere. And I was hesitant to go back to New Orleans initially because I have a small baby, and the condition of the city, you know, still is not wonderful, but right after the storm was really not appropriate for children. So,
sure.
I didn't think it was the right thing to do to go back and open the restaurant.
And so where did you go? Did you evacuate before the hurricane?
We did. We evacuated the day, the Sunday morning before the storm.
Uh-huh.
We went up to Memphis. My parents live in Memphis, which is about a six-hour drive from here. Initially we drove up to Jackson, which is 3 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
And the storm was starting to look so big at that point. We spent the night there Sunday night and then decided to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning on Monday and drive all the way to Memphis because we thought we still were not fully out of harm's way. So, which turned out to be a good decision because my family in Jackson lost power for about 4 days after the storm. So mm-hmm. they ended up coming up to Memphis and joining us up there. So.
And let's talk here for a moment just about that sequence of events, because we were able to confirm in the news reports over the last 24 hours that the White House was informed of the first levee break somewhere between 24 and 40 hours before they had previously admitted that. And
mm-hmm.
it's just another indication of the sloppy response and the misdirection that the administration served up to us. And
yeah.
in particular, you know, the president seemed oblivious to the real situation in New Orleans until almost Wednesday of that week, the storm having hit Monday and clearing out late Monday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I listened to a little bit of the Senate hearings with our mayor earlier in the week, and one of the things that he was saying was that communications were so difficult right after the storm. And, of course, we just, you know, as just regular old people, we experienced that, too. We couldn't get in touch with any of our friends or, you know, any people down here by cell phone. It took probably about a week before people started to catch on that we could get text messages to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, I'm not defending their response in any way because obviously it was lacking. But communication was definitely an issue in those early days.
With your baby to return to New Orleans.
We stayed up there for about, I guess we stayed up there 2 or 3 weeks. And then we got a call from some friends of ours who were planning to go back down. We weren't even allowed to go back down. I guess it was about 3 weeks before they allowed anybody back down. I can't remember exactly, but
it was around the 1st of October, I think.
Okay. So the first people they were allowing back were business owners. And so we could get in to the city went down again the second day to get some stuff out of the house, mm-hmm. which actually we weren't even allowed in our neighborhood. They sort of snuck into our neighborhood just to see our house.
Yeah. And how much damage was there to your home?
Well, the water, it was different in different neighborhoods. The water in our neighborhood, I think, sat there longer than it did in some other places. That, you know, we got, I think, about 4 feet of water in our house. And some other places that got that much dried out a little bit quicker. In our neighborhood, it just sort of sat there. So we lost, as far as our possessions, pretty much everything that was made out of wood or cloth, which is most things in your house.
Yeah.
You know, we salvaged a few pieces of iron, glass, furniture, and anything that was over 4 feet, which is mostly things that you don't use very often at all, like
yeah.
Christmas decorations and that sort of thing. And then some dishes, some kitchen stuff that were stored in higher shelves.
But the structure itself was intact?
The structure was intact. If we're still sort of debating whether or not we're going to rebuild the house, depending on, you know, basically what the government decides is going to happen with the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
And, of course, the levees. But if we do decide to rebuild the house, it's going to take a lot because we had heat and air that were underneath the house or at ground level. We'd have to redo all the electrical. I'm not sure about what we'd have to do with plumbing, if anything, and then, of course, the sheetrock and all that sort of thing.
Right. And, Ann, where are you living now?
We rented an apartment. We're back in New Orleans now. We rented an apartment in the Irish Channel, which is, I guess, part of Uptown. We've been back here for about 2 weeks. We thought long and hard about moving somewhere else, but finally our deadline was after Christmas. We were going to decide what we're doing, so we decided to come back down.
What did draw you back? Clearly, it's challenging, and for anyone who, you know, wants to make a living from a business like your restaurant, it's going to be quite a while before there is an employment base that can, you know, give people disposable income so that they can afford to rebuild their homes and then, you know, take the family out to dinner.
Right. Well, restaurants actually in town are doing pretty well. I think because, well, there are not nearly as many of them as there were before, for one. And also because after spending your day, you know, cleaning out your damaged house, you know, sometimes spending all day just going to the post office to pick up your mail. A lot of neighborhoods still don't have mail delivery, things like that. What you want to do is go out and, you know, be in a pleasant environment. So the inside of a restaurant is a pretty pleasant environment compared to what the rest of the city looks like right now. But we decided to come back. Well, for one, my husband is in construction, and his boss was very interested in him coming back, and so it just seemed like the right thing for him to do, and we felt sort of an obligation to the city to see what we could do to get it back on its feet. And so I'm not working right now. I'm taking care of our baby. He's working like crazy, of course, and I've just in the last week or so I've been involved in sort of a grassroots small business organization that we're starting to try to be, you know, a force that, and try to figure out some way to help all of these businesses sort of get back on their feet, even the ones that weren't physically damaged, especially in the downtown area, the businesses that rely so heavily on tourism. They just, you know, I mean, a lot of people are saying, it's not even worth it for them to go open the door.
Yeah. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you some more about the situation in New Orleans, what life is like there for you and people you know, about the health conditions and the general safety, about your ability just to buy groceries and, you know, conduct regular day-to-day living. And we'll talk some about the politics of neglect of New Orleans. Many of us believe from here that Washington has lost interest in your problems. I'll get your reaction as we continue. And if you'd like to talk with our guest, Ann Lloyd, in New Orleans, call me now, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast. That's 831-899-KRXA. Or toll-free from Eureka or anywhere else, 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. It's 5:45 now, and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Attention antiquarians. The Monterey Peninsula is one of the best places in the country to go antiquing. And the two best stores on the peninsula to shop for beautiful, unique, and precious items are the Monterey Antique and Gift Center in Monterey and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove. Are you looking for a discontinued china piece to complete the wedding set you started many years ago? How about a genuine gold pocket watch with the original movement? Does authentic frontier art appeal to you? If so, you must spend a few hours browsing at the Monterey Antique and Gift Center in downtown Monterey and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove. For the finest antiques, collectibles, and jewelry, there's no place like the Monterey Antique and Gift Center, 449 Alvarado Street, and Holman's Antique Plaza at 542 Lighthouse in Pacific Grove.
Owner Nader Aga looks forward to serving you at one of his beautiful and unique shops, the Monterey Antique and Gift Center on Alvarado and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove.
Are you having a problem making your home loan payments? Do you have equity to protect? At your wit's end, trying to figure out how you'll be able to keep your home? Would you like to speak to a highly qualified loan agent who does not charge for advice? Hi, I'm John Sullivan of Executive Financial Services in Salinas. We can advise you about negotiating with your lender, and believe me, most lenders would rather negotiate with you than own your home. We can advise you about the foreclosure process and bankruptcy filings. If you need us, you can call us 7 days a week between 10 and 7 at 443-7277. We personally answer the phone and don't pre-screen our calls. We're here to give you advice. We can give you your options 5 minutes after reviewing your credit report. We might be able to help you. We might not be able to help you. But if you never call us, you'll never know. That's 443-7277 for a five-minute solution. Executive Financial Services at 443-7277.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic one more time on this Friday evening. It's 547. Here's Amy Knight.
You would think it would start to slow down, but it's not. It's just getting into gear in Prunedale, Highway 156 at the Cathedral Oak Road. A two-car collision in blocking lanes, so that means it's going to be heavy now between 1 and 101 between Prunedale and Castroville. Expect delays. Highway 1 at Dolan Road in Moss Landing, an injury accident on the shoulder. And in Salinas, North 101 after Laurel Drive, two pickup trucks still clearing in the center divide. It's going to be heavy around Monterey, Pebble Beach, and Pacific Row as everybody leaves the golf course tonight and heads out to dinner, so expect delays. Plan accordingly. TomTom is your go portable everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. Have a safe drive home. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Amy.
Have a good weekend.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, live up and down the left coast. I'm your humble host, Peter B. You can email me at any time, peter@peterbcollins.com. We continue our conversation with Ann Lloyd, who has just returned to her city of New Orleans. And we're talking about the situation there, what life is like. And Ann, at this point, I want to turn and just ask you, without loading the question, what is most needed and most lacking in the response to the requirements you have there to rebuild this city, revitalize it, and re-inhabit it with at least most of the people who were there before the hurricanes and the floods?
Gosh, that is a tall order. I would say, and this is something that, you know, it's not the thing that most people are talking about right now, but my big concern is the levees. I haven't heard, you know, we heard when the president came down here in mid-September that we were, you know, they were going to be bigger, stronger, et cetera, et cetera. But my concern as a business owner, as a homeowner, I just don't know how much investment I want to make in this community right now if I have no confidence that the city is not going to be flooded again.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a million stories around here about the inefficiency of FEMA, and housing is a huge concern. Like we were talking about earlier, there's a lot of people are having trouble reopening their businesses because they have no staff. There's just no service sector in the city anymore. But I think the, you know, number one basic thing is if this city is not protected by levees, you know, I mean, if we flood again this summer, who's going to come back after that?
Yeah, I mean, hurricane season starts up again in June, so there's very little time to really make New Orleans fundamentally safe. As you're pointing out, this is the baseline. If you cannot trust the levees, then you cannot live below sea level in southern Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something that people are talking about down here, I don't know about the rest of the country, is the levees were built by the Army Corps of Engineers. That's a federal, you know, last I checked.
Yep.
The Army is part of the federal government. And so we're a little sort of put off by the attitude that, you know, we've heard Louisiana doesn't have a plan, New Orleans doesn't have a plan. The storm was not what flooded the city. It was the breaching of the levees that flooded the city.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd like to see some more responsibility being taken for fixing that problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the composition of the city ethnically? This is an issue that has arisen, and just in the last couple of days, Congressman Barney Frank took some flack because he used the phrase ethnic cleansing. And he was specific about it. He believes that this is, not intentional, but the impact of the various policies, such as, you know, the levels of compensation people can get for their lost homes, roughly at about 60%, which means that many people will be financially underwater long after their homes are no longer underwater. And also just the complexity of, trying to rebuild the city in a rational way and maintain enough, housing for low-income persons so that those who have left for Texas or any other state around the country will have a good incentive to return. Is it your view that New Orleans is going to change significantly in its character?
Well, I think that it will change significantly in its character simply because it's going to take so long to rebuild. I think there are a lot of areas that are not going to be rebuilt at all. And so just the fact that we're now a city of 150,000 people or so is hugely different. I don't think that people down here are glad that, I think that I've sort of heard that various people around the country are getting the impression that, oh, all the white people in New Orleans now are just so happy that, it's now a majority white city. I don't think that that's true at all. I think that people here are concerned about the fact that so many New Orleanians have been displaced, and that, the South has always sort of been an area of, race is always an issue in the South. And but I don't think it's that one group doesn't want the other to come back or, that sort of thing. I think that we're a community, and I think that, people of different race, different classes, need each other. And the way the city is now is a perfect example of that. We're limited in our ability to function as the city is now because so many people are gone.
Yeah. I want to take a caller. Jake's on the line from Arcata. Jake, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. Say hello to Ann Lloyd.
Hey, Ann, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I'd just like to ask you some questions. I know most everybody out there in the audience is familiar with the thousands of displaced inner-city residents from New Orleans who are all around the country. But the media is really quiet about the thousands of people who are missing and they can't account for. Have you heard any more about this, about all those thousands of people they still have not been able to find?
I haven't. I don't know about that. I will tell you, in the beginning, in the days immediately following the storm, I don't know if this is, just my interpretation of, the way the media was sort of presenting the situation down here, but when we started hearing about people's houses flooding and people not being able to get out of their houses before they were flooded, I was guessing, I started thinking, oh, there's going to be 10,000 people that are killed from this. It turned out that the numbers for that are a lot lower, but I don't know if that's, if it's people that were killed or just people that haven't sort of checked into with FEMA or the Red Cross or those types of organizations, so they're not able to be traced. I really don't know. I haven't heard a lot about that down here.
Go ahead, Jake. You have another question? Did we lose Jake? I guess so. Sorry, Jake. I thought you were still there. One of the things here, Ann, that has occurred to me, and, I'm comfortable here thousands of miles away, but that the government really has dropped the ball in a lot of key areas. And fundamentally, the state of Louisiana is broke, and has no immediate prospects for generating enough tax revenue to get back on track to provide basic services of police, fire, medical care, and public school education. And I feel one of the glaring omissions is that the federal government did not step in and provide some bridge financing, whether it's, you know, a cash handout or loans, to help the government entities get back on a decent fiscal footing. And without that, it's hard to imagine how these government agencies, these government entities, can ever get back into a financial condition where they can provide the basic necessities that you expect.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, it's from the very beginning, I think that the thing that first the state and then the federal government just simply did not recognize is that this city is overwhelmed. You know, I mean, I think people have been pointing the finger at our mayor for not responding well in the early days. But I just think the situation is too large for this area to handle on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't changed, you know, from then until now.
Yeah.
And it absolutely is going to take some sort of help
and
from
just about,
a larger entity.
Just about 30 seconds remaining. Any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our California listeners?
Well, I'm really glad you called. I'm glad that you're doing this. Everyone here was pretty discouraged with the State of the Union address because,
yeah,
you know, we are part of the union, we are Americans, and we do feel like that we have been neglected, we have been forgotten by the federal government, and we would like to bring the focus back down here because it's going to take a very long time.
And we're with you. Thanks a lot for joining us today, and please give our love to everybody you encounter.
Thanks very much. It was
all
nice,
right, that's Ann Lloyd in New Orleans. I'm Peter B. Collins. I'll talk to you Monday.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Dave Barrett. The Department of Homeland Security claimed it did not immediately realize how serious the effects were from Hurricane Katrina.
For them to now claim that we didn't have awareness of it, I think is just baloney.
That's what a Senate committee heard today.
Former FEMA Chief Michael Brown told Congress if terrorists had destroyed the levees in New Orleans instead of Katrina, the federal response would have been more aggressive.
Because this was a natural disaster that has become the stepchild within the Department of Homeland Security.
Brown says natural disasters have been playing second fiddle to terror concerns ever since FEMA was put under the Department of Homeland Security in 2003.
That's CBS's Cheryl Atkinson. Brown says he feels he's been somewhat abandoned and is perhaps a scapegoat for the government's slow response following Katrina. $8.8 billion in unaccounted for spending was sent to Iraq for reconstruction. CBS's Steve Croft says officials don't know how it was spent, money that included millions for a company, Custer Battles, to provide security at Baghdad International Airport.
In a memo obtained by 60 Minutes, the airport's director of security wrote to the coalition authority, Custer Battles has shown themselves to be unresponsive, uncooperative, incompetent, deceitful, manipulative, and war profiteers. Other than that, they're swell fellows.
More on this story on the upcoming edition of CBS's 60 Minutes. The deadline is now February 26th, 16 days from today. That's when kidnappers threatened to kill journalist Jill Carroll, who was abducted last month in Baghdad. Apparently, there are some new demands extremists made when speaking to a Kuwaiti TV station, but those demands have not been detailed. She pleaded guilty to a single charge of child endangerment, and for that, KYW's Lynn Atkins says an adoptive mother was sentenced today in Camden, New Jersey, to 7 years behind bars.
Vanessa Jackson showed no emotion while the four abused boys detailed the horror. 21-year-old Bruce Jackson weighed just 45 pounds when rescued at 19.
You didn't feed me or my brothers well. You would make us eat pancake batter, dried up grits, oatmeal, uncooked cream of wheat, and raw potatoes instead of cooked food.
KJ's adoptive mother also spoke.
Since this is not the final judgment, may God have mercy on you on Judgment Day.
Jackson is eligible for parole in 2 years. Lynn Adkins for CBS News in Camden.
The Dow was up 36.